You know, I never had a J-Lo thing.
Mm-hmm.
But oddly, the single most vivid sex dream I've ever had in my life was with J-Lo.
Really?
And I was her kept boy up in the penthouse, and she would go do interviews and just come back and...
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
Everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Whoop-ow!
Whoop-ow!
Mm-hmm.
That was a whoop-ow. Crack with your whoopee tail! From Music Video Sins, we have Barrett Sher.
Yes!
Whoop-ow!
And from all the things, Aaron Dicer.
Idly ho, Cinerinos.
Today, we're going to be doing another installment of the best of the years we've been alive, and nice. This will be 2019.
I am inevitable.
Eat shit.
Smug smile.
Definitely eat shit.
Nothing makes sense anymore.
Yeah, I know, it's definitely not a good time to be a Nazi.
Do you know how many girls are going to be up your vagina next year? Every time I come to visit you, you're going to be scissoring a different girl.
Yeah, baby. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go. We did this the first time ever. We have did some prep.
I know. We actually organized here.
Thanks to Aaron. Instead of like writing down a list of like, I think, yeah, let's mention that one. Fuck it. We narrowed this list down to top box office award nominations, and then we threw in some wild cards.
Mm-hmm.
So this won't be like the big comprehensive, we don't have any time to do this type of thing. So I'm going to go up and down this list. I'm not going to go in any particular order, but I'm going to make sure that we kind of get to this list that we're doing here. I'll start off with Avengers Endgame. That's that's the populist one there that made a million, billion, thousand, hundred zillion dollars.
Seems
of some
like
sort.
It came out 5 years ago at this point.
It really does. It really does. Like, it feels like, what was it, May?
Yeah.
It feels like 2 years ago this movie.
Dude, I've seen this movie way too many times for as little as I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's the question, right? Like, how has your view on it progressed in that distance of time that it's felt like it's been out there?
It's a wilting boner.
Yeah, it gets more average the further I get from it. Yeah.
Now, conversely, does Infinity War go up?
Yes.
Right? Isn't that the same thing I'm feeling, too? Is like, Infinity War just keeps growing in my estimation, and Endgame, I'm just like, eh. You know, I mean, believe me, I sat in a crowded theater opening weekend and hooted and hollered with everybody else. It was like a sporting event, and it was fun. But as like a movie, it just kind of has diminished since then a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They yada yada a lot
mm-hmm.
in that movie.
A lot.
Yeah. I think they generally stick the landing in that movie, but it's just. I never got that excitement that I had from Infinity War.
It's just as fan servicey as The Rise of Skywalker. Rise of the Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they have the same beats essentially, and they go through the same similar confusing messes to get to where they want to get to.
I feel like Ultron, the movie Ultron, Age of Ultron,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
showed us more Tony figuring out how to create Ultron, then Endgame showed us Tony figuring out fucking time travel.
I figured it out.
And, you know, that's the biggest yada for me. Not even how the time travel works, but that he just goes, oh, I'm going to solve it tonight.
Yeah.
I'm going to go in this one room and give it a good 4 hours and I'll solve this shit. But just
The movie has to be that way, right? Because they've got so much to do.
Yes.
They have to move so many chess pieces around to get to where they want to go that there has to be a ton of convenience. There has to be a ton
and
of
there
yada
also
yada.
Has to be a ton of not very important, like Rhodey on the planet from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
I could give a rat's ass about that.
And then that, you know, they throw in Captain Marvel, which that was a famously like, you know, had to put that in at the last minute type of thing. It's the reason why she's only in it for the beginning and
mm-hmm.
the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they didn't even have the idea of Captain Marvel in the universe for like until they started making this movie.
Oh, really?
I think that's what it was. Did you hear that?
Well, I think that simultaneously they were developing the Captain Marvel storyline along with the kind of the end of this, you know, Infinity Saga timeline. And so I think they were trying to figure. I think if it's possible, if Marvel had gone differently, had, you know, if it had been a bomb or whatever, that maybe they would have shifted some stuff around. But I mean, I think it was part of the plan, but it was like a consecutive plan from my understanding.
Mm-hmm. So. It might have been awesome if they just never had a Captain Marvel movie and then she just shows up.
It would have been
that
awesome.
Actually might have been cool.
Absolutely would have been awesome.
And then they can do the Captain Marvel movie later, especially since it's all retro anyway.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's a great point. That's interesting.
Anytime like you introduce, it's a very similar problem. In a film with many problems with Justice League, anytime you introduce a Superman or Superwoman character, you have to diminish his or her powers in order for them to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's I don't like it.
I do think it bears mentioning that of the landings that were this year, the Star Wars landing, the Game of Thrones landing, and the Avengers landing, I do think it's the best of the three. Like,
for sure.
I think it sticks the landing better than those other two. It's a hard thing to do.
Someone on Facebook was asking me about why the Rise of Skywalker ending, they didn't stick that as well. Why was it that they didn't stick that one as well as Endgame got stuck? And I think it's because just think about how old Star Wars is now. It's 42 years old. It had a trilogy, 77 to 83. Then like it was gone for a long time, and George Lucas comes back and he makes his self-serving prequels essentially. Mm-hmm. And then ownership of Star Wars transfers over to Disney and to other filmmakers, and they're trying to take off from basically from something that really hasn't been written yet, really, mm-hmm. and everything. And I don't think they knew exactly how they wanted to go. They couldn't have, considering J.J. Abrams started it one way, Rian Johnson went another way, and then J.J. Abrams tried to rein it back in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's just basically the reason why. Like, Endgame had 11 years of consistent films all the way through up to that point.
Which is why I like the rumor I'm hearing that's probably not true, that Kevin Feige might slip over from Marvel and take the reins of Star Wars and guide them over the next 10 years. And I mean, I think at the end of the day, we really have to give him as much credit for the MCU films as anyone else, because
mm-hmm.
They all have different directors for the most part. The Russo brothers get a lot of credit. I think the actors and Robert Downey Jr. should get a lot of credit, but he's been shepherding this thing this whole time. And where Rise of Skywalker fell apart was there was no shepherd.
Yeah.
There was nobody when they made Force Awakens who knew what the next two movies were going to be and who was the boss of the directors.
Right? I think there needs to be an official title for that person. I think in the, like, with expanded universes and, you know, content,
mm-hmm.
I think that we will see, like, the introduction of not a director, but, like, a executive producer technically would be one of those titles, but something more specifically that means shepherd, you know, that means, you know, executive shepherder.
Let's go with shepherd.
Yeah. Yeah,
well,
shepherd is good. So because
you're the shepherd.
Because yeah. Right. It is the key difference, and it is, I think, the main thing that gives the MCU the glue
yep.
to kind of stick together that Star Wars did not have.
Yeah, and honestly, when Iron Man came out, I didn't know who Kevin Feige was, but he already had some elements of this plan in place, a lot of them. I don't think they figured out Endgame, you know, right at the beginning, but, you know, they knew they were going to go Thor, Captain America, and Iron Man. And yeah, I don't feel like these last three Star Wars movies had anybody in that role, which is why we get pandemonium. It's almost like, I bet you Rian Johnson and J.J. Abrams like each other just fine.
Sure.
And they could sit and have a drink just fine. But they, with their movies, they were kind of having a pissing match,
mm-hmm.
and it was a tug back and forth, and no one really wins, and so all the viewers lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's exactly what happened with that. I mean, I'd love to hear the story, the behind the scenes and all that. Is there anything in development Star Wars-wise now?
Well, a lot of rumors.
They pulled that Obi-Wan for...
show.
They
didn't pull it. They just delayed it.
Right.
But
movie-wise, I don't know if there is anything.
It's a constant. They've been constantly like, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And they've had to, like, fire directors, and they've pulled back from certain things.
Well, they brought the Game of Thrones guys on to do a trilogy, and then they
went
very quietly
Netflix.
Backed away from that.
Yeah, they were like,
that's off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because
that's officially off.
They took a deal from Netflix.
And even Rian Johnson... Yeah. has been very carefully wording his comments about his supposed Star Wars trilogy by just saying, I'm just waiting. They're making plans over there. I'm just waiting to hear from them. I think that trilogy is probably dead as well.
So that is exactly what you guys are saying. It needs a Kevin Feige to come in and say, this is what we're going to do.
And it's a property that you can do that with. You can take Rey and give her three films on her own. You can go back to the Knights of the Old Republic and tell a story there. You can do with Star Wars characters like you've done with Iron Man and Thor, and then bring them together for a big, like, I think that's totally what needs to happen in that universe.
Mm-hmm.
We're already kind of talking about Star Wars.
Yes,
so
we are.
Let's talk about Rise of the Skywalker, the Rise of Skywalker. It's Rise of the Skywalker. From this point forward, it's Rise of the Skywalker.
Rots. Yes.
It might as well be.
Yep.
And, no, anyway, we're already sort of talking about this, and we've already talked a lot about it. But yeah, this movie, it's a lot of fan service, a lot of it's fun, a lot of good ideas in there, but it's just it's handicapped by the middle movie, I think.
Yeah.
I would take a little bit of a different approach, and that's probably because I'm a apologist for The Last Jedi. I love that movie.
No, I love The Last Jedi too, and I know what you're saying. You want to say it a different way.
Yeah. We were talking about how they've done Star Wars, and they've really treated it like improv. I think Jeremy and I have had this conversation where it's like, okay, a new director's going to come in, and they're going to take the scene from this place. And it really feels like, to me, JJ was like, okay, here's the first scene. And Ryan was like, okay, yes, and this. And then JJ came in and was like, no, back to this. You know, so JJ didn't yes and Ryan, but I feel like you could see Last Jedi as a yes and to the other one. It's different. It takes it in a different way.
I feel like once you released Last Jedi, you can't make a movie like Rise of Skywalker.
Right,
you have
exactly.
to keep going in the direction yes. Rian Johnson did. And so what disappointed me, I didn't love Last Jedi.
Right.
But I would rather have seen a proper sequel to Last Jedi than Rise of Skywalker, which tries too much to undo Last Jedi.
Right.
And then throw in some fan service as well. Let's give Chewie a fucking medal.
Yeah.
That medal really chaps
it
your ass.
Really
it
really does. It really does.
Well, my worst, and I didn't really like Rise of Skywalker all that much. I loved it as a Star Wars. I'm always going to love lightsabers and cool lightsaber battles.
Sure.
And I think that battle on the ship with the mist and it's gorgeous. It's beautiful stuff. But the thing that really gets me is it's just a movie without risk. It is just a movie that pretends like it wants to risk something, and then 5 seconds later pulls it right back and says, "Nah, just kidding." And it's just like it has no strength of its convictions. And
yeah.
That's the rough part.
And
for me.
I hate the fact that it just became a scavenger hunt, basically, throughout the whole
Rise
thing.
Of the MacGuffins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just a whole bunch of stuff that I just didn't understand through that first and only viewing that I've had.
That's also, Force Awakens also has the, let's put the doohickey in the dauber and find a guy. Like I think JJ likes those kind of like, because even his Mission Impossible 3
sure.
has that like massive Rabbit's MacGuffin. Yeah.
Well, and Alias is full of that kind of stuff.
Rambaldi. Like,
yeah, Rambaldi. Yeah. So. That may just be a JJ signature.
Mm-hmm.
But yep. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Very much. What else we got?
Yeah, it's weird how I kind of liked Rise of Skywalker, and I was just like, but still, afterwards, you're just like, now that I'm standing back from those three movies, what the fuck is that movie?
Yeah. It was fun as hell to watch them.
Yeah.
It was. It really was. Mm. It's a really fun movie.
It might have been a nice, like, first of the movies.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think Adam Driver is killing it in that movie. Like, I just think he's incredible.
He and Rey both are just like, are perfect. I mean, they work off of each other really, really well, which is weird because they only have, you know, a few minutes of screen time really with each other.
I think that Force Dyad idea, the idea that they are a connected part of the Force, could have been really interesting if you've given some time and depth to planning that out over three movies, you know, and what that would look like. But it almost feels kind of just like waved at a little bit.
I mean, yes, by name, but I went back and watched Force Awakens recently, and you see that connection almost immediately.
Yeah, it's there.
And when you go back and you start seeing the signs, I don't think
that
they had...
You mean between Rey and Kylo?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's cool. I think, and they certainly explored it in Last Jedi, and they certainly expanded on it in Rise of the Skywalker. So maybe that was the only thread that they had mapped out all the way through.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving around the list, here's a movie that I did not see. Rocket Man.
No.
Let's hear it, Barrett.
Yeah, Barrett. You're very passionate about wanting to talk about this.
So Rocket Man, I'd heard really good things about it. And I heard different things than Bohemian Rhapsody, which I don't think Chris and Jeremy and I, we didn't like all that much.
No, it sucks.
straight up biopic Bohemian Rhapsody was, and really focused on Freddie Mercury and stuff like that. And so when Rocketman started, it is a different movie. It has kind of like hallucinatory flashbacks and stuff like that, and more of an ethereal bent to it and stuff like that. And about halfway through, I was like, I'm kind of liking this movie. And then it turns into a straight on goddamn fucking biopic.
Uh-oh.
And it pissed me off more than Bohemian Rhapsody, that at least had the balls to show we're going to do this all the way through.
Mm.
And fuck this movie.
Mm. So what was it, do you think, that why do you, when you say like a straight biopic,
yes,
like what does that entail for you? Like, what are the things that happen in the last part of the movie where you're like, not this again, you know, kind of thing? I'm just curious.
Rise to stardom, too much money, too much fame, too right. many drugs, downfall, recovery.
But isn't the story? Like, I mean, isn't...
Yes. But okay. But I thought they were going to tell it in a different way. Same way I thought that Bohemian Rhapsody was going to tell the story of Queen and not Freddie Mercury.
Right.
They decided we're going to go more emotional and all that stuff, which is fine for some people. I don't like it. We've seen it all fucking before, and I thought this was going to be a different take on that sort of story.
So here's what I liked about it. I liked the things that I found different about it from Bohemian Rhapsody, which I also did not like, similar to you guys. But the things that were different for me was, number one, Rocketman felt more like a musical to me, like an actual musical. Like, the musical numbers were a little more fantastical.
Yeah.
There were, you know, more kind of almost supernatural elements to them. It was kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
The moment where he rises up from the piano, like, got me right in the field. Like, it was just like, oh, it perfectly symbolized.
Is that the Rocketman moment? Like,
yeah.
The song Rocketman?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was definitely the high point of the movie. And I think it's right in the middle. And after that is where it falls off for me.
And then the other things are, I think it treated Elton John with so much more humanity than they treated Freddie Mercury with. In the Bohemian Rhapsody movie, Freddie Mercury is just a pawn for everybody else around him.
Yeah.
In Rocketman, Elton John is the actor. And when he makes mistakes, when he makes choices that bring him down, like we've seen that story before, mm-hmm. sure. But when he makes those choices, I felt like it let him have ownership of those choices and then made the resolutions more powerful. And I didn't feel that in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Those are the reasons, like, if I were talking about it with you and others, I would say, yeah, I like it better than Bohemian Rhapsody because it feels more authentic. It feels more honest to me. So
yeah.
So,
but
yeah.
Was Harlan Williams good in it?
Yes. It's my favorite Harlan Williams.
There are even people old enough to know that movie who don't even know that movie.
He's got the whole world.
We discussed it, I think, when this Rocket Man came out, about that Harlan Williams one that came out in the 90s.
I saw it.
You saw it?
I saw it.
I did not see it.
I absolutely saw it.
I remember seeing the trailer a bunch, though.
Yeah, man.
Harlan Williams.
He's probably more famous for that Something About Mary
mm-hmm.
hitchhiker role.
He invented 7-minute ads.
He's in Half Baked, too, right?
I think he is. Then we have, and this is one of many Netflix movies that came out that made a huge impact, but Dolomite Is My Name, which probably should have gotten more Oscar consideration, I think, especially for Wesley Snipes.
Boy,
this movie's great.
You can't see this Wesley Snipes performance coming from a mile away, can you?
No.
Never seen anything like this from Wesley Snipes.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen... It's such a weird character, and I guess he's playing a real person, so I guess this person existed, but it's flamboyant, it's effeminate, but all about the ladies. He's a drunk, he's an auteur, but he's not. It's so good.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so good.
And as sort of a feature of Eddie Murphy coming back as well, because we're going to see this, and he had his Saturday Night Live appearance, and mm-hmm. he's Coming to America 2 coming out next year, or this year.
Who knows? It might be good.
It might be.
It's
you
not
never know.
Be good.
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
What was the movie that was about The Room, about the making of The Room?
Disaster Artist.
Mm-hmm. This to me is the better version of Disaster Artist.
Yeah.
This to me feels like the idea of, let's all get together and make movies, even though we're goofy and don't know what we're doing, but it's going to be the kind of movies we want to make, you know, kind of thing. And this is the version of that movie that I felt like I was connected to the characters and I was with them and it made sense to me. So,
well, the movie that it reminded me of, and then later I was reminded that the writers of Ed Wood wrote this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I was reminded of Ed Wood all the way through this. I felt like it was the exact same sort of circumstances. All the, you know, they don't have any money. They're trying to shoot whatever they can. Like, one take is usually good enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun, it's just a fun movie, man. It's so fun.
There's two moments in this movie that stood out to me. The one where Wesley Snipes is, his character is big time in him, and Rudy Ray Moore,
mm-hmm.
He's like, I have no ego about this. If somebody tells me to move a box, I'm going to move that box. If somebody gets hungry, I'm going to make them a sandwich and stuff like that. And you could tell like how committed he is with this. And then towards the end, really at the final act, gave me all the goosebumps that I got at like Rise of Skywalker and Endgame.
Yeah. But yeah, this was a great movie. I'm hoping a lot of people are getting. I don't know. Do you know how it's doing as far like
Netflix never
says. I know Netflix never says, but I'm just saying. Do you see a lot of talk about Dolemite? It feels like not very many people have seen this.
Well, and because the award season talk about Netflix are about the ones that are getting nominated, and Dolemite isn't getting nominated really. So
yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame.
It is.
Let's go on to the second biggest movie of this year, The Lion King.
Is there anything new to say about
There's nothing new to say about this movie, right?
No. This movie had nothing new to say about this movie.
Now they're going to do Bambi.
Yeah.
Well, and that's comparable in what I think is the most important way that this movie failed, which is you took the expressive art of hand-drawn animation where you could make animals actually emote, and then you handcuffed it beyond realistic animals that cannot emote.
You can't anthropomorphize animals that are realistic.
Right, and so Bambi's going to do the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Thumper is an actual rabbit is not interesting. It's not cute.
No, and it's the same with... the problem is... Disney isn't making these movies for us.
No.
And they're not making these movies for anyone older than us. Mm. They're explicitly making these movies for people 25 and under who probably haven't seen a lot of these old originals, or at least don't have the attachment to them. Now, this makes a certain amount of business sense to me. When I remember when Little Mermaid, Lion King, Aladdin, when they were with Disney's animated renaissance, mm-hmm. right? Personally, at that point in my life, had not seen Black Beauty? Not Black Beauty.
That's Black Cauldron?
No, what's the Black Cauldron? Not Black Cauldron. The one that we sinned on the...
Sleeping Beauty?
Sleeping Beauty. Black Beauty, Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella. I hadn't seen a bunch of those.
Snow White.
I certainly hadn't seen them all the time. When I went to college, I watched Aladdin every day my entire freshman year. Every day.
Oh, my God.
So, but I guess what I'm saying is, if you think of people 20 years younger than us... They don't have that attachment to that Lion King and that Aladdin.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably more fucking... I mean, Lion King made $1 billion.
Yep.
There's a reason people are going to see it. It's lifeless. It's soulless.
Mm-hmm.
It's unoriginal. But there's a good business reason for it. It's like when the Colts cut Peyton Manning. I understood.
Exactly like when the Colts cut Peyton.
I understood. It just breaks my heart.
I'm trying... It's impossible, too, to watch this movie without... If you have watched that first one so many times, comparing it to that one,
right.
And I don't know what you're supposed to do in that situation. Are you supposed to say this movie is exactly as good as that last one that came out? If I didn't know that other one existed, this would be perfectly acceptable. I would love this too.
Well, it's like we summed up in that one sin that said you made another animated movie. You just, it's mm-hmm. like Disney saying we figured out how to draw better. What pissed me off most about this movie was that opening shot in the original animated movie,
mm-hmm.
where you're focusing on a leaf and behind there's like zebras and shit running.
The whole rack focus thing.
Yes, and they do that rack focus, but it looks fucking real in the animated version.
Mm-hmm.
The CGI version recreates that shot identically.
Mm-hmm.
What's the point of that?
Yeah.
You're not showing off how good your animators are anymore. You're just, God damn, this movie is offensive to me.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I love about movies, this movie is the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I kept trying to watch that movie with this idea that I hadn't seen the original and would I like it and everything. And I don't know. There are parts in there that would have fallen flat, I think, for me. Didn't resonate as much. Just the way everything was, the performances of it and the random Beyonce song they threw in there. And, I just don't know. I, it's impossible to really judge this movie.
Spirit, watch the heavens wings open. What does that mean? Yeah. How does that apply to Simba? It doesn't. It's fucking something Beyonce sang and you put it in the movie.
Let's move on to Frozen 2, a movie that only Chris and Aaron have seen.
That's right. What did you think?
This is one of my least favorite reviews that I've ever done, because I watched this movie the day it opened.
Sure.
And for a mini pod that was supposed to happen the next day, things happened, and then it was like a week later before we were able to do Frozen 2 mini pod. And I had forgotten a lot about the movie by the time we did the review. So I was like, yeah, I don't even remember what the hell all this other stuff was about. Right. Plus, my experience with that movie in the auditorium with kids was not fun. and so, you know, I try to tune that out. It's just nearly impossible.
Yeah.
With all the kids talking. And so, like, I'm glad that they're having a good time. I have no problem with what they're doing. It's just for me, I can't do it. And I had to watch the movie because of what we were doing and everything. Now, I thought this movie was perfectly fine. I don't understand why it's the number one animated movie of all time, however. Makes no sense to me. I guess worldwide. I don't think it has quite beat the domestic record.
No, no.
But, like, I didn't understand that. I didn't think there was anything offered by Frozen 2.
It's kind of the Shrek 2 effect, right? Like mm-hmm. where you have this something come out of nowhere and just be amazing and everybody loves it. And it's hard for me to say about Shrek because I don't even necessarily like the original Shrek. But and then the second one is just automatically going to do more than the first one mm-hmm. and do gangbusters. And the characters, people love these characters and mm-hmm. families love these characters. And so they're going to go see it. I'm with you. This is a perfectly fine movie. I am predisposed to love this movie. I love the original Frozen. Mm-hmm. I love the lyricists and musicians who write this music. For me, this felt rushed. It felt like
which is funny because it took so long to come.
Yeah,
out.
Yeah, right. But it feels like they really tried to force a lot into this, and because they did, they really shorted all these characters. Mm-hmm. So what's nice about the first one is you can have side characters that pop in and do their thing. Well, when those side characters become popular, all of a sudden they need more to do, but you can't give them more to do without taking away from, you know, an overall plot.
Did they make
plot.
That fucking Olaf a main character?
Yeah, yeah. Olaf is a main character.
That's a shame.
Although I will say Olaf probably has the funniest part of this movie.
He's hilarious.
Yeah.
Josh Gad is so great in mm-hmm. this movie. And I think the songs are good. There's this 80s rock ballad in the middle that I was dying at. It was hilarious. Mm-hmm. But as a movie, like, it didn't necessarily speak to me.
I was confused about some things in the movie, just how Elsa and Anna ended up in the same place when, like, Anna had gone across an ocean. And then, like, Elsa had gone across an ocean and Anna had gone, like, down a little, was in a raft and
yep,
went into
and
a cave.
In a cave. Yep.
And then suddenly they were in the same place.
Okay.
I didn't understand that at all. Now, again, it's the experience I probably had with it that contributed to that. But yeah, I agree with you about the rush. Like, it's almost like, yes, while it took a long time for them to come out with this movie, it took them a long time to come up with a movie. And
right.
then by the time it was, you know, we got to come out with this in 2019.
Yeah.
I had to make a movie and it was this one and it was perfectly fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's perfectly fine. I think that's the way to say it.
Perfectly fine.
On to another Netflix movie, The Two Popes, which is another one that I feel like, even though it got some Oscar nominations, Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Pryce got nominated for this. It still don't feel like enough people are talking about it. And this movie is gorgeous and great. Mm-hmm. And I highly enjoyed it.
Did they both get nominated for supporting actor?
I think
no.
Jonathan
Pryce was lead, right?
He's lead.
I think so.
Yeah.
Does that sound like the right breakdown to you?
Category
when you recommended
fraud,
it a few
I mean,
weeks ago, it sounded like they were on screen almost the same amount of time.
For the most part, but then all the backstory is Jonathan Pryce.
Yeah, Jonathan okay. Pryce is the protagonist.
Okay.
It's kind of like a lot of people wondered why Samuel L. Jackson was a supporting actor in Pulp Fiction with Travolta being the lead. And it's because Travolta has a whole other section
yeah.
in the movie.
Yeah.
And when back in 94, I was like, yeah, they were equal or whatever. But when you watch the movie again, you're like, oh, yeah, Samuel L. Jackson really did have just the two spots
yeah.
and Travolta had three. But it's the same way here. Price, the Pope Benedict character, is talked about more. He has got a bit more backstory, more everything in it and everything. But
Dicer prefers his Pope Benedictless.
Yeah.
Lunch callback.
Yeah. No one's going to get that joke but the four of us.
That's right. But yeah, now somebody took me to task on pronouncing, and I probably will not pronounce it right, but because Fernando Meirelles, I guess, is a Brazilian director.
Oh, I remember somebody saying that, yeah.
Somebody said that you actually pronounce the L's, and there's probably some other thing that I'm messing up.
As opposed to the usual Spanish Y sound, yeah.
It would be Meirelles, but I think it's actually Meirelles.
Okay. What's anyway. Interesting is I had a Spanish teacher in high school who's from the Yucatan Peninsula in a very specific region where the double L's are said as soft J's.
Oh, yeah.
So it'd be more like Bereges or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just think that's, I always thought that was fast. He taught us his way.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up doing double L's in Spanish with a J sound. And then, of course, I got corrected by my Spanish professor in college. And then I skipped so many of that class, I dropped it.
Yeah.
For the sake of nitpickiness, I think we said that Price was Benedict. He's Pope Francis in this.
Yeah. But yeah, Pope Benedict is Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah,
in this.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, it is a great movie. It's just so well shot, and the set, either it's a set or they actually shot in the Vatican. I have no idea.
A lot of it is sets. There is some on location, but I've actually been in some of those sets when I went to Los Angeles for the Two Popes thing or whatever. Yeah, like that living room set where they watch football together and hang out.
Oh, that's an amazing scene.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This movie blew me away because you had recommended it. And so the wife and I watched it. God, I mean, really, really well done. Shows the humanity of both men mm-hmm. very, very well. Because these are as high as you can get in the entire world, really. And they knock them down a peg.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's an amazing point to character for Pope Benedict to be like, I'm going to call this guy in that I don't approve of, mm-hmm. don't like, and all this, and because I see the church as something bigger than myself. We could have a lot of that going on more today.
Well, and that's one of the main reasons I love this movie so much. I really do think it speaks to our divisive culture in a lot of ways, in an understanding of how do you really communicate with somebody who vehemently disagrees with you on important things. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's easy to disagree on movies. You know, yeah. That's not necessarily important. But to disagree on foundational things for people becomes difficult. And how do we do that? And I think you're right. I think we could definitely use a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, I will go. I'll continue with the Netflix here. And The Irishman, movie I have seen twice. I saw it in theaters. I saw it on Netflix. I very much enjoyed this movie. It's not in my top 10 for the year.
Yeah. It's weird because when I think about it, it's devalued over time, but I did enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was good.
It's going to be hard for me to find 3 hours to rewatch this anytime soon, though.
So it's one of two experiences I had this year with directors playing in areas where for the first time I enjoyed it more than had the counter opinion of not liking movies that people like. That was a long way to say. I don't like Goodfellas. I'm not a big fan of Scorsese's gangster movies, mm-hmm. but he approaches this movie, and part of the length is the humanity he tries to give to this character, especially with that stuff at the end. I still think it could have been half an hour shorter. Mm-hmm. I still think he could have used somebody reining that in a little bit. But I found this movie to say all the things I wanted those other movies to say that I felt they were flipping about. Mm. And so, you know, the idea of the excitement and interestingness of what it means to be a mobster is balanced with actual human consequence in this movie in an intentional way, as far as what I saw. So I really did like The Irishman. I don't love it, but I really do like it.
I liked Pacino switching accents in mid sentence, in mid word. These motherfuckers. Fucking Pacino.
But yeah, I don't. It's oddly enough, it may have to be another movie that long time down the road I'll have to watch again and be like, oh yeah, I missed the genius of this the first two times I watched. But I, like I said, I liked it. And it feels like you're saying it's a negative thing when you're not like yeah, this was the greatest thing ever. But, you know, it, I just thought it was perfectly fine, perfectly good movie. Not Scorsese's best.
Mm-hmm. It's got some moments, though, man.
Like, it does.
There are some big scenes in this movie that are really compelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, yeah, I enjoyed that.
Hey, there's also compelling scenes in The Blue and the Gray, but I'm not going to watch all 24 hours of that. Actually, there's not anything compelling in The Blue and the Gray, by the way.
Back to some blockbusters. We have Toy Story 4. Just as a side, yeah. Just as a side note, I feel like there were 100 movies that had carnivals in them this year. Toy Story 4 had a carnival.
It Chapter Two.
Us has a carnival. Euphoria is a TV show, but it had a carnival. There were a lot of carnivals.
Shazam
had a carnival.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
a lot of central carnivals, like carnivals that are kind of central to the, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It just, there was a ton. And the kid from It was in Shazam as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I don't know what it was. If it was just sort of, it's probably just a coincidence, but I think I was watching Shazam and going, man, it seems like every movie ends up in a carnival.
Yeah. There's even a carnival at the end of 1917.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing.
The whole World War was a carnival. Okay, so Toy Story 4, I think, made tremendous leaps in animation and everything. It's gorgeous to look at. I just don't know if I like the story too much.
What the fuck?
Jeremy and I don't think have seen it. Have you seen it?
I have no, and I will eventually. Mm. This is not one of those movies like Gone with the Wind that I just don't want to watch ever. I have no desire, zero. I don't care.
It's a whoopty fuck movie.
I have experienced these characters as much as I desire to. Mm-hmm. You go ahead and make your billions. I don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. You can demonstrate leaps in artistic computer graphic ability without making entire movies that are pointless.
Yeah.
Lion King, Toy Story 4, looking at you.
Good Dinosaur.
Good Dinosaur has some amazing animation in it.
Did it make a ton of money?
Toy Story 4?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, it made a lot. I think all the Toy Stories always have some new message about growing up, right? This one is...
This one's kind of about parenting in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's about, I think it's parenting, and it's also about, I guess, letting go.
Yeah, empty nest. That's what I mean. It's about that empty nest thing where it's like, oh, my job's actually done. Like, how do I deal with that? How do I deal with a world where my world is completely changed, not by something I'm choosing to do, but something I'm choosing to let go of? Mm. I really enjoyed it. That's probably not a surprise. I think all four Toy Story movies, I think it's insane the level of greatness that they've shown in four movies in a row. Like, you just don't see that
I just
happen.
Want them to slide some of that greatness around to these other movies.
Well, they can. I mean, they do, right? Coco was great. Inside Out was great. Like, they're still making great original stuff. I mean, I know I haven't seen any of the trailers, so, you know, I know you're worried about Onward.
Onward looks bad.
Yeah.
But what about Soul? Like, Soul's also
Soul
coming
looks
out this
good,
year. So, you know, they're still making original stuff. It's not like they're putting all the Pixar eggs in the sequel basket, right? So
it feels like, yeah, I just think about all the hours, the hundreds and hundreds of hours of talented people that went toward a fourth Toy Story movie instead of something new. And we're never going to get that movie they didn't make because this one.
I mean, but it results in hundreds and thousands of hours of enjoyment for lots of people, right?
But like, not for me.
Wait till they make the
you
sequel.
You haven't seen it. You don't even know that yet. Maybe
but,
it will.
My point is, until I've seen it, it has not produced any enjoyment for me.
That's true.
Yeah. I think this is the last of the Netflix's Marriage Story.
Woo, baby.
Yeah, Ooh Baby's right. this is really good. This is a performance piece.
It's very much a performance piece, and you can see a lot of Noah Baumbach in it. You can see a lot of, like, everybody's story, right? We talked about, like, Adam Driver bringing his experience and Scarlett Johansson bringing hers and him interviewing a bunch of, like, you know, lawyers and stuff like that. Laura Dern's great in this. Ray Liotta's great in this. I found this to be emotional. And like I said, at the very end, it got me. The hitch in him reading the letter was fantastic. But I didn't think it was grueling or anything like that. I just enjoyed it.
I agree. I it's hard for me to resonate with the people who are like, oh, it's just, it's 2 hours of torture. I just like, I don't, it's so human. And yes, there is pain in humanity, but part of the reason that it's, we were talking about Pleasantville recently. This is a message that Pleasantville has. Part of the reason that the joy can be so much joy is because of the pain. Like, you know, the idea that we feel it so deeply because it can go either way of that spectrum. And I think this movie has that. The reason it's painful is because of the beautiful love these people have for each other. And I didn't say have. Like, you can see the love they have for each other in this movie, even as they're trying to figure out legally how to separate their lives. And the villain in this movie is the system, which I love. And the system is just trying to destroy them as they're trying to amicably separate. The system is like, nah, that's not really how it works.
Yeah, yeah. And so, there's some legitimately funny moments in this, too. The whole process of him getting served is fucking hilarious, which makes it even more devastating when it actually happens.
Oh, it's good.
I want to watch this. This is a movie that I can watch a bunch, but also Baumbach is kind of my guy.
You know, I was so glad to hear you say, is it While We're Young? Or I was so glad to hear you say recently that you saw that and enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. Actually where I started loving Baumbach. That was my first Baumbach movie where I was like, oh, I dig this. Yeah. This is really powerful and human and interesting. And then Meyerowitz Stories was great as well. And no, I really like the work he's doing.
Yeah.
Back to some comic book superhero movies. We have Captain Marvel, and we also have Spider-Man Far From Home.
Captain Marvel feels like it really came out 5 years
ago. It does. Captain Marvel was very average.
It is, and I hate that it is.
Yeah.
But because Brie Larson is really good in it.
Yeah.
It has a very good theme to it and all that stuff, but the movie itself just ain't doing her any favors.
No, I don't think so. I think it's pretty... I was definitely hoping for more on that one. I just thought it was just kind of average, and then there's this idea of retroing everything, this whole, like, let's go back to the 80s, let's go back to the 90s and everything. That's starting to get old, too.
I'll tell you what, when every shot of her in that Nine Inch Nails shirt drives me crazy. Because it feels like, what?
I am a large fan of her in that Nine Inch Nails shirt.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I understand what you're saying,
too. I'm not talking about visually. I'm talking about, like, the Blockbuster stuff is pretty bad, but that Nine Inch Nails shirt was just like we got, everything has to be, it's got to go 90s. We got to go 90s. Let's go, it's the 90s. Do the 90s. Put her in a 90s shirt. N-I-N. Only one N is reversed. Everybody will know what that means. Yay. And it's just not, that's not filmmaking. That's just, you know,
that's
what I mean?
VH1, I Love the 90s is what that
exactly.
is.
Yeah.
Exactly. The little things that piss you the fuck off.
What's funny is that most people misunderstand about me is the big things don't really bother. the little things just get under my fucking skin.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say about Captain Marvel.
Would you say it's middle of the road MCU, or would you say it's lesser MCU?
I'd say it's middle.
Middle
of
the road.
Bottom half of the middle.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean,
I agree.
There are certainly way worse. Like Thor to the Dark World is the worst, I think, and Iron Man 2 is down there, or Iron Man 3.
I was gonna say I would put Iron Man 3 lower.
Age of Ultron.
Yeah, those are all probably worse than Captain Marvel is, but then Captain Marvel's like right there.
Yeah, I kind of feel like a middle of the road MCU movie is still a fun time at the theater. Like
there's nothing objectively wrong with Captain Marvel. It's just
go eat your popcorn, have a good time.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing enjoy fantastic about it.
Nine Inch Nail shirt and go on with your day.
There's nothing marvelous about it.
Nice. But Spider-Man Far From Home, we're also kind of down on that
one,
too.
I feel like they took a step back for after Homecoming. You know, you guys know I'm a big Homecoming fan. Maybe more than you guys. I don't know. But, and again, I feel like what they were hamstrung on was not knowing much about Endgame, and I have read enough to know that they told them very little. Like, basically 5 years is a snap. They're going to come back after that. Go make your movie.
So they knew about Infinity War, but they didn't know about Endgame?
No, they knew. No, they did. Because
they filmed those all.
They made this, I think, concurrently with Infinity War. I think they overlapped. I'm just saying, as far as Endgame, them coming back after 5 years and time travel, they weren't told all of that. They were just told enough to do that high school news program about the blip and then go tell a story in Europe.
And obviously they were told who died and like basically everything they tell us they were told, you know. It's in the movie.
Yeah. And you know, it's
in the movie.
It's not bad. I really do like Jake Gyllenhaal in this movie. I like the idea of Mysterio being what he is. I don't want to spoil the movie, but
it's a different kind of MCU villain, right? Like, it's not same old same,
which is nice. Yes and no. It does come down to a Tony Stark's fucked me over and I'm angry about it.
Motive is pretty much the same.
But in terms of him using smoke and mirrors as opposed to actual superpowers.
As opposed to just punching each other.
It was a really nice touch. You know, that they explain way too much with just drones. They just say drones. And drones just can't fucking do that. I'm sorry.
I have only seen it the once. The hallucinatory scene when we first see him encountering Mysterio with all his powers, does that hold up as good as it did?
It's visually stunning.
Oh, yeah, it's gorgeous. Yeah.
But it logically makes no sense. There's no way he would be able to do that and manipulate. He makes Peter think he's in his original sweatshirt suit.
Yeah, right?
You can't do that. Yeah. You can't get inside Peter's brain with a goddamn drone. But as what they were going for with a nightmare sequence this is worse than I realized, I thought it was visually really awesome.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, it's time to talk about Likewise.
Likewise.
Yeah.
This is an app.
It's an app for sure. It's one of them deals that you can get on your phone and stuff.
Yeah, this makes life so much easier, man. Because you import it builds stuff for you. You import your stuff, like what you enjoy, what you like watching, what you like reading, what you like eating, and that kind of stuff. It covers everything. And based on that, it's going to make you recommendations, and then like aggregate all that stuff, tell you where to find it. And how to get it in the easiest way possible.
And that's the biggest thing for me, is to be able to get a suggestion that I wouldn't normally get.
Yeah.
But no, it gives you these suggestions, and it's stuff that you may not have thought about before. And that's what I like about something like this.
The deal about this, you know, there's always this thing about the fear of missing out. Is that the thing?
FOMO,
where it's like, oh well, there's a million different things that I could be doing right now or could be watching right now when I'm watching the Breaking Bad for the ninth time or something.
That.
Like, this is gonna say, like, I just pulled it up and it recommended to me a movie that I've seen but I haven't seen in a while, 10 Cloverfield Lane. It also tells me it's available on iTunes, on YouTube, on AMC, weirdly enough, like all that stuff, and I can click through and it will take me to that link. Like, this is convenience all put together in an actual app.
Yeah.
That was my favorite part when I loaded it up, was the fact that I knew it was going to tell me other things I might like. I didn't realize how it was going to make it so easy to go find those things.
Yeah.
Which I really love about the app. And you also mentioned the breadth of things that it will help you find other things you like in, which I thought was really cool too. So, yeah.
Yeah, especially if you're in you'll import in the restaurants tab, like you'll import what type of food that you like and that kind of thing. And if you're in a different city or something like that, and you're certainly not as knowledgeable of where to go, that will be really nice. It'll recommend a restaurant. You like Mexican food. It's over here at this carnitas place.
This is the kind of app that if the technology were available, you'd push the button, the food would be right there in front of you. That's how simple it feels with the other thing, right? Like, if that technology were available, Likewise would do it.
So go to the Google Play Store, the place where you access Android apps, and go there, Aaron.
Okay.
Go there, and you've already done it. But you, listener, if you've got one of them Android things, go to that and download this Likewise app, and it will change your life. It's fantastic. If you're an iPhone user, like Chris and I are, go to the Apple App Store and download the Likewise app, and it will change your life in that way. And if you're on the interwebs, and you're on your laptop or your tablet or your thing that connects to the internet, go to likewise.com/syncast. And let us know. Let them know that we sent you and all that stuff. It's free. It's a free download. We just really dig it, and we know that you will too. So get Likewise right now.
Jojo Rabbit. No Barrett is wanting to talk.
I
about
love
this.
Jojo. Get out right now,
please.
Too late for you and me.
She just won her first Grammy.
Did she really?
She did.
For what?
I don't know.
But that song I just sang was like 20 years old.
That was a long time ago.
I didn't even know she was still making
music.
Oh, yeah.
She's still doing.
I think she was like 14 when she did that one.
Oh.
Yeah. Leave.
Yeah. Get out right now. Yeah, that was like 2002, I think.
I tell you what, I was not ready for how excellent this movie was.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard good things, but I was not ready for how amazing the child performances are across the board, both JoJo and the girl, I forget her name, and his buddy, who's basically like a Ned almost.
Did you
like,
see in our in Critics' Choice Young Performers category, we nominated all three of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. They are amazing. And you had mentioned that Scarlett Johansson is a different type of Scarlett Johansson in this movie, certainly different than A Marriage Story.
Mm-hmm.
I found her absolutely amazing in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she played that character so well. And this has... this has a moment in it where I literally shut my DVD down and was like, oh shit. There was a moment where I had
there
to
is,
just
man.
Step back
yeah.
and go, oh shit, and walk around the room for a while.
I think it's the most interesting part of the movie, and I think it's the part of the movie that makes or breaks it for people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that moment in the movie.
Breaks it? How would it?
Absolutely. Because it breaks the tone. Like, there's a tone. If you put yourself into a certain tone in that movie and you misunderstand what the movie is doing,
uh-huh.
that moment breaks it for you.
I see. I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it totally made it for me.
Yeah.
This is one of the most, certainly the most unique movie that I saw all year. And it's one of the most surprising movies. And it's one of the ones that is closest to my heart. For whatever, it hit me right in the feels, as they say. Like, emotionally, it really, really connected with me.
Yeah, ooh. Yeah. Taika Waititi's doing a good double duty here. He's
hilarious.
He's hilarious,
man.
As Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little boy's representation of Hitler. Yep. I think that's the magic trick that's sort of being done there.
Mm-hmm.
Cause if it was actual Hitler, this would be, you would be like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you who's, secretly amazing in this is Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
And it's actually him and all of his like glory and all that stuff is in the trailer. But when you see it in the movie, I had forgotten that he did that. When you see it in the movie, it's absolutely hilarious. You will crack the fuck up. I was surprised by every part of this movie. I fucking love it.
Ooh. I had a really good experience with it as well. It has grown on me since I've seen it. I did struggle with the tone disparity a little bit, but I actually think he does pull it off. And I think when I watch it again, I'll be able to sink into it even a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's a phenomenal film.
We talked briefly about people who are not making Star Wars movies anymore, but the new rumor is that they're trying to get Taika Waititi.
Yeah. Hey, I think he can do literally anything at this point.
Yeah, I think
and
so.
And I love everything that I've seen with him. I haven't seen Hunt for the Wilder People yet, but What We Do in the Shadows is great. Fucking, obviously, Thor Ragnarok. This is fantastic. He's good to go in my book.
I would highly recommend watching Hunt for the Wilder People.
That's this week.
An excellent movie. Scarlett Johansson, the thing that I found different about her was that she actually has some like sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
That seems to be missing from a lot of her roles, you know, especially like Marriage Story and all the Black Widow stuff. And she's always, I don't know, just a little bit. She's always the serious character. Mm-hmm. I think maybe the last time I felt like I'd seen her in a comedy, like in a comedic role, was Ghost World,
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah.
And it was good to see her getting back to that in this.
That whole scene where she's at the kid sasses her basically at dinner and wants to see his dad.
Mm-hmm.
That whole scene is straight out of like a one-act play, basically. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love the movie.
Yeah. On to more originality with Aladdin. I didn't see this. You guys did.
Oh, wow. He does this thing where he Guy Ritchie's the time.
During songs. It's the worst.
Slows down and speeds up the action. So the main characters, like Aladdin and
so One Jump Ahead is the main egregious example.
The what?
One Jump Ahead.
Where yes. Where they're running right at the camera in slow motion, but singing One Jump Ahead of the Bad Guys. And he does it a couple different times. It's really unsettling. Guy Ritchie and this movie should never have been like a pair. I don't know how it fucking happened.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I can't believe I want to say this. This is not as bad as The Lion King.
Okay.
It's still pretty fucking terrible.
Okay. My favorite behind the scenes moment this year, and I think it's a fine to reveal it, is the arm wrestling that went between you guys on the Never Had a Friend Like Me.
Oh,
thing.
Because
you hated it and you loved it.
It was one of my favorite parts of the movie.
And Jeremy won. They slowed it down like just barely, and it just kills what made that song have momentum. And it must have given you some more of
something. Well, it made it fresh for me. It gave me a different perspective. It became like more of like an almost an R&B slow kind of, like, you know, I don't know. There's something cool about what Will Smith does with it for me, which is it gives it kind of the swag, you know, and it wasn't. And that song should have a swag, but it's a different kind of swag that the original has. It's more of kind of a street swag, I guess, would be a way to say it.
Yeah, I mean, the same problems exist. That what works best about the cartoon is you can't recreate with CGI monkeys and human actors. Mm-hmm. And you can actually emote better and more adorably with cartoons than you can with real people.
Yeah.
And that Iago, man, that fucking bird. Because they kept Iago the same. Like, he's a wisecracking... What the problem with your daughter? It's like Gilbert Gottfried all over again. Only in this movie, everybody else is trying to act like this is real and legit. Only the parrot's over here cracking jokes all goddamn. I don't like much of what Disney's doing with their own classic properties.
And I guess maybe this is probably good to say, because I hate The Lion King just as much as you do. But I generally have liked their live action, quote unquote, live action remakes. Dumbo was awful.
Well, Dumbo was atrocious. But in most of those cases, they have done newish things.
Right.
Whereas Lion King was paint by numbers.
I can find the things I like about Beauty and the Beast. I can find the things I like about Aladdin. I genuinely like the Cinderella remake. I think that's a really beautiful movie. But yeah, there were a couple this year that I was like, oh, this is what Jeremy's talking about.
Is that Kenneth Branagh that did Cinderella?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I remember liking that too.
I think it's a genuinely good movie.
Branagh was sort of in that Disney fold there although Thor.
Well, that was pure Marvel at that point.
Well,
right?
Thor was Paramount. Like, that was before Disney had bought everything.
Right.
But I guess based on the strength of Thor, they gave him Cinderella, and yeah, he was in that little mix there for a bit, and then wasn't either. Decided not to be. Friend of the show, Kenneth Branagh, by the
he's
way.
He's probably got gobs of money, don't you
he's
think?
He's just going to keep making Agatha Christie movies until
go for
he's
it,
dead.
Man.
I'm
go
fine
for
with
it.
That.
Yeah,
I,
go for it.
I didn't hate Murder on the Orient Express. I didn't think it was necessary, but I thought
I loved
it was beautiful.
On to Greta Gerwig's Little Women.
Yes.
Little Women. Little Women. I can't think about any Little Women movie without thinking about Mo from the bar. Remember in Simpsons whenever he's reading Little Women to kids
to
or something,
kids.
And they were little women.
They were no longer little girls. they were little women.
This is another. This is a performance piece too.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a highlight reel for Greta. Like what she does to this property. I was going to ask you about this, Jeremy, because this is another example of a property that you could say, you know, unnecessary, it's been done so many times before, that kind of thing. But the choices she makes almost make it necessary in some ways.
But let's not excuse a bunch of lazy, shitty reboots took the care to be inventive.
Right, but
when I roll my eyes at another remake of a movie that came out 15 years ago, I'm not expecting that director to take the care that Greta Gerwig did to reinvent the story. You know, I feel like Bradley Cooper thought he was doing that.
Yes.
With Star is Born, but he wasn't. Whereas she did, especially in the sense of time, jumping forward into the future of these girls' lives gives you a better understanding of them as girls. And I've seen the Winona Ryder one a dozen times. It's like my wife's favorite movie. She didn't really like this new one that much because it played with the... It made so many new choices,
well,
and she's attached to the older ones.
Kind of confusing at the beginning.
Yes, that's fair.
Yeah.
Absolutely fair.
Because you don't know exactly that's what they're doing, and you have to... The tell that I started going with was Florence Pugh's character.
Yeah.
Was how young and naive she is in certain scenes, and then how wizened she is in others and everything. That's where you really get the sense of like, oh, we're in the dark, the older times now.
Yes.
But Yeah, the play with time I did like. It spared her from having to get four younger actresses and then four older actresses and everything. But Saoirse Ronan is one of my favorite performances of hers.
She's brilliant in everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's so good.
I've not seen a bad performance out of her yet. And I'm not even sure she's made a bad movie.
Yeah.
Worst movie be?
Yeah, I don't know. The City of Ember.
Yeah, I mean, you got to go back that far, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But like, Hannah's great. Brooklyn's great. Mm-hmm. Oh, I know what it is. It's the Lovely Bones. That's the worst movie.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
But she's still pretty okay in that.
Yeah. The movie looks beautiful. It's unbelievably well shot. One thing I noticed about this, though, I don't know if you guys noticed this. Does there seem to be any camera movement in this movie?
Good question. I wasn't looking for that. Did not grab my attention.
It was something that sort of like about halfway to three quarters through the movie, I was like, there's not one sweeping camera motion in this at all. It's always just, here's the shot of the actress, and and they cut back and forth.
I don't remember that, but I felt that exact same way watching Jay and Silent Bob reboot.
Oh, no, for sure that. I mean, that's the way Kevin Smith has always been.
Yes, but even in that court scene, I'm pretty sure the judge and the bailiff were not on set at the same time.
Oh, no, it didn't look like that at
all. They're never in a shot at the same time. It always cuts to the judge, and then cuts to the bailiff dancing, cuts back to a close-up of Kevin Smith.
Welcome to the only podcast that has a discussion comparing Jay and Silent Bob reboot with Little Women.
That's what you come for.
That's what we're here for.
That's right. But you're absolutely right. That's exactly how it comes off, because he's also the king of like just a random cutaway for no reason, like going ooh or whoa, you know, that type of thing. But Little Women is very good, and I think it sort of got short shrift, didn't it, for Oscar nomination?
No, I mean, it's getting nominations. I don't think anybody expects it. Well, no, that's not true. I think Greta will win the screenplay.
Adapted.
Okay. I think she'll win an Oscar for the screenplay. I think she will.
Did he win 7 nominations somewhere in there?
Yeah. Yeah.
But she wasn't nominated.
But she wasn't nominated for director.
And that's ridiculous.
Hey, you know what I learned a couple days ago when there was a Homeland marathon on? That's where Timothée Chalamet came from.
Oh.
He was Brody's daughter's boyfriend the second season of Homeland.
Oh, holy shit.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fun.
There's a lot of people who came out of that show, too. Like Melissa Benoist came out of that. She has like one scene in the whole thing, but then she became Supergirl.
I actually remember Melissa Benoist from Glee.
Oh,
before
yeah.
Before that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Moving on to the movie we all want to talk about, Joker. And then nobody said anything.
I don't.
Does anybody in this room like it?
Hey, Arena, stop playing that song.
Gary Glitter is Hitler.
Yes.
Another lunch callback. Sorry.
I'm going to probably watch this movie if it comes on like in the background, and I'll probably watch a little bit of it, but I'm not going to go out of my way to watch this movie anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
It's an exercise in misery with a payoff that serves I don't know who.
Why do you think people are gravitating to this movie?
There's a reason. There is a reason. I don't know what it is, but there is a reason.
I think the performance is, I mean, there's a gravitational pull to the performance. I mean,
and
he's
the character.
Doing,
and the character, I guess. Yeah,
yeah, but I mean, Joaquin is doing something that is devastating. Like, he is devastating himself to deliver this performance. Like, you can feel it in that strange laugh, you know? Like, I mean, he is doing some interesting things here. So I think it's the performance. I think there's a white male rage to it
a white male rage, but there's also a anti-rich vibe running all across America.
Mm-hmm. Eat the Rich is a huge theme this year.
Yeah, and that I think is as much to do as any of the white male rage stuff. The reason... Never mind. It's Joaquin's performance is great. Film looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Decent pedigree. Mm-hmm. De Niro's in it.
Mm-hmm. I just said the reason it's so disappointing for me is I just think the Emperor has no clothes. Like, I just, when I hear people talk about the Emperor's beautiful clothes, I'm like, I don't, where is it? Where's the message? I don't, it's so empty. This movie is so empty of saying anything.
And then the filmmaker and many people involved with it have tried to change your mind about its emptiness and tell you just didn't get it, which is only more infuriating. It also, It also robs, for me personally, as a Batman comic fan, it robs the Joker of his laugh by making it a nervous tick, like a hiccup.
Well, it robs the Joker of a lot of things. It robs him of his intelligence.
It does, yeah. His intelligence is gone. It paints him with the mental illness brush, but it doesn't ever get any specific. But, you know, the Joker's laugh was, like, psychotic. It's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And in here, it's like that... It's just awkward. Yeah. It makes everybody uncomfortable, and it's not like he's actually laughing.
Yeah.
The Joker finds the chaos he does funny.
Yeah.
He's not laughing because his brain is broken. Yeah. I mean, his brain's broken, but...
The other thing I continue to say about this movie is it came on the scene in at least from what I understood, was going to say, oh, we're going to do a quote-unquote superhero movie that's not a superhero movie. We're going to get all rid of that other stuff. This is going to be a human movie about the actual character.
I think they still think that's what they made.
They did. This is so a superhero
movie.
It's
a Batman movie.
They wink at so many Batmans. This is winking a nod at so... I mean, it's...
But you're going to see this now. You're going to see... They did such a good job with Thanos as a villain in the MCU. Mm. And now Joker's done well. We've got Morbius coming up with the previous Joker to be a Spider-Man villain that's somehow going to be in both Marvel canon and Sony canon.
Yeah, that's an interesting development.
But Venom, we already have. You're going to see more and more villain-centric movies that try and act like superheroes don't exist, but they're all trading on the superheroes.
Yeah.
Every single one of them.
What I don't understand, though, is it connected with audiences, obviously. It made $1 billion,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why it connected with Academy voters.
That's the one that, again, I just think we're dealing with a lot of people who don't watch all the movies. Oh. And so they see De Niro, they know Joaquin's performance was amazing. Tick that box. And it made $1 billion, but it's an art film.
The one thing about this movie that is probably the most poignant is the thing that they just sort of write off pretty quickly, and that's the government funding towards mental health, which is the sort of the debate that we've been having with you know, mass shootings and mm-hmm. things like that, where, you know, we want to have mental health, we want to make sure that the people who are sick get it, but we're not willing to give the money for it, you know. So they don't really explore that. They just say, well, this is what's happened. And
that's the reason that this motherfucker does what he does.
Yes.
And he even says that's the reason that he does what he does.
Yeah.
And listen, had it been in a more nuanced hand, maybe I could buy a little bit of it, but not the way it's presented.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it can lick my side taint.
Well, and it also, it just gave itself too many outs, right? So you don't like it? Well, it was all a dream. None of that was real. Or you don't like that this guy became the joke? Maybe he did. Maybe he just inspired a future Joker. And you can't have all the cakes. You got to eat one of them fuckers.
It just feels...
That's how that saying goes, right?
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Yeah.
Marie Antoinette said that, I think.
Yeah. It just feels like it takes a subject that people normally don't take seriously, and then it masquerades as this something is something that's serious. And people are like, well, look at that. That is so different. Strips it down. Yeah. Look, that's so exciting how it, you know, and we've seen this story a lot. We've mm-hmm. seen this story a bunch. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. I really don't. I don't know that I will either.
That's why I like that. I think you wrote it. The one about letting De Niro play the Jerry Lewis role in remake of King of Comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. On to Parasite.
Ha ha!
Wait, is it a movie ad and Barrett? Is he
no, but this movie blew my fucking brain off.
You're not alone.
I tweeted this. I have never known what was coming less next in a movie in my entire life. It plays like a comedy for the first 10 minutes. And then it just keeps turning corners. I don't expect it to turn. And by the time it's done, I'm like, that is a beautiful, unexpected conglomeration of weird shit.
I agree. They put that on the poster.
Beautiful conglomeration of weird shit.
I mean, Jeremy Scott. At least two-thirds of the movie, I'm waiting for a monster of some kind to show up.
Yeah.
And there are human monsters, I suppose, in this movie, but not...
The beauty of this movie is that Kind of, but not all the way. Nobody's a hero and nobody's a villain.
What I like is the game I like playing ever since I saw it is who's the parasite? Who's the titular parasite? Because I could make a case for about six different characters.
Absolutely.
And I think that's probably the point.
Yep.
There is no one in my mind making more original films than Bong Joon-ho. Mm-hmm. I have not seen The Host. I will rectify that.
Oh, you have not seen The Host.
I thought it was horror.
It's so good.
Well, you've seen The Parasite. You need to see The Host.
My point is, I saw Snowpiercer and I saw Okja, and those are two of the most inventive movies.
Okja!
And those are two of the most inventive movies I've ever seen. And then this one I watched, even if it was horror, because of that, and now it's not. It is, well, it has horror elements. It's not a monster horror movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a demon movie. But this is, he should win the most inventive filmmaker award forever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
No one is as clever as this guy.
Yeah.
I will watch anything he makes.
Nice.
I will watch.
You liked it.
He could remake Nymphomaniac Part 1 and 2, and I would watch.
Oh, it would be amazing. This is another one of those weird Academy things where they don't want to give acting nominations to non-English speaking roles.
Sure. I think yeah, it's a loaded phrase, but there's systemic racism in that, right? Like, there's this idea of what a great movie. Well, was it great? Not because of the actors? Were they not doing great work, you know? And I think it's just something, it's not intentional racism. It's not like, you know, I'm not going to give them a nomination because they're Asian. It's just this thing where, you know, those subtle nuances of like me, not like me, and you just don't think of it in that way.
It's hard to know if you're an actor, an English-speaking actor, and you're watching someone speak Korean, where they're making their nuances and things of that nature. And,
yeah, because you're reading the subtitles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's what it comes down to. It's probably the best point of it is that they're reading the subtitles, right? God, Parasite is so good, man.
Yes, it is.
I am actually shocked it got as many Oscar nominations as it did because I felt like it was just going to be one of those movies that just got forgotten for some reason. And I'm glad it got what it did. For sure. And I'm excited for
what did get, that. It got nominated for Best Picture.
Best Picture, Best Director.
And Best Screenplay? No.
I believe screenplay was in there.
I think it deserves to win any of those. But I think it should come away with it. If there's any fairness in the world, it should win one. It should win one of those awards.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's screenplay and film editing and production design.
Ooh. Production design.
Production design is the one it should win for. They
that whole house was a set, man.
Those are the other nominations?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they built that whole house from scratch.
My favorite part in this is when you're right about all the curveballs, but there's a part where a group of characters is stuck in a position.
Oh, my God.
And some other characters do something completely unexpected, and they're just... Look. Waiting it out.
Go clockwise.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a hard movie. You can't talk about this really without spoilers. Right. Yeah. And I think it's new enough that people should watch this without spoilers.
Okay.
That movie is great.
It's funny, it's tense, it's scary, it's inventive and clever. Just watch it. You'll love it.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing it again. Yeah. I haven't had a chance to since I first saw it, but on to Jumanji, The Next Level.
You know, all I've heard about this movie is, it's okay.
Yeah, that's about right.
You saw it?
I did. I think
not as good as the previous.
It's not as good as the first one. After Jonathan and I did our mini pod, we had one person tell us that we didn't understand the movie.
Of course. When you say the first one, you mean the second one.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and especially since... Now that they're sort of officially connecting that first 1995 movie.
Well, they connected it in the first one pretty strongly.
Yeah, but they
said his character's name.
Yeah, I mean, they said his character's name, and then, like, they didn't really have any... In the second one, they have a character who is from that.
Well, and they're doing sequel baiting that is in the second one that is definitely tying it into the first one. So, yeah.
But I didn't like the whole game part of this of this movie, which is a big part of the movie.
Well, it's kind of the central part of the Jumanji movies. It's supposed to be.
Yeah. I mean, you can laugh along with them as they're playing this game, but I didn't like any of it. There's the scene in the trailer where they're running across the bridges with all the monkeys and everything. And it's, to me, it's just too much.
Yeah, it's just noise.
Too much for me. I don't even care. There's a point at the beginning, before they get on those bridges, that Jack Black, is going through the whole, like, oh, I can see all the ways that we're going to go. And I was like, oh, they're going to actually show us how they're going to get across this. And then once that plan is done, I have no idea what they're supposed to be doing at that point.
Yeah.
I don't even know, and there's a point where they even jump to one thing and somebody jumps to another and they're like, no, it's got to be this one. And you're like, why? Why does it have to be this one?
None of it matters.
But I didn't like the fact that, like, it seemed like to me the whole movie is won. The whole game is won with something that they may have never had they may have never had a character that would come, that came along with. That's the thing that bothered me the most about the movie.
There's a lot about this movie that doesn't make logical sense. There's a lot of that stuff, and for its flaws, that first one, at least for me, the game stuff kind of made sense, and I enjoyed that. When I say the first, I mean the second one. But in this one, it turns into a lot of nonsense.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it, like,
and a lot of convenience.
Yes,
especially they foreshadow convenience in this movie, which is
awesome,
which is interesting to me. But there's, you know, this, I don't know what's a spoiler and what's not necessarily, but the idea that they can play different characters and change characters within the movie, and it's like oh, you jumped in this pond and now you're all the exact people you want to, like, there's no explanation, there's no it's just here's the pond of convenience.
Well, yeah. And I was told also in that Facebook post that you didn't see all of the time that they were in the pool. They could have gone through different character changes and then finally got to the ones that they wanted,
right?
And we just didn't see that,
right?
Sure, why not? Yeah.
One thing this movie did teach me, though, is that Jack Black is a good actor. Like, legitimately, he is the best at playing all the different, like, archetypes and the characters. Like, of the people, he's the one I most believed was being in, you know, inhabited.
So really, this Jumanji sequel kind of ripped off the Fantastic Four Silver Surfer, didn't it?
Sure.
With the, like, everybody's powers changing.
Yeah.
You remember?
Or Heart and Souls.
Heart and Souls.
All right, guys. It is time to talk about BetterHelp.
Oh, I love BetterHelp. Okay. So I logged on to BetterHelp a couple days ago, actually, to reconnect with my counselor that I got matched with. And just almost immediately, not saying this happens all the time, but I've got a really good counselor. she got back to me almost immediately saying, hey, how's it going? What's up? Did you go over that stuff that I sent you recently? It's on mindfulness, which I usually am like, oh, mindfulness, who needs that? It really, really helped, especially at the time. And all that comes from going to this counseling room on the BetterHelp app or the BetterHelp website. And it couldn't be more convenient. So BetterHelp is an online counseling system where basically you log on, go to betterhelp.com/sincast, and they will direct you on how to kind of get started in your experience. It'll ask you a few things about how you've been feeling, what you want to focus on, where you live, that kind of thing, and just kind of get your overall experience. Doesn't take very long. Within about 24 hours or less, with me it was much less because I got a good therapist, you get matched to a counselor. And it sets up your whole meeting room. You can do appointments there. You can do texting there. You can do messaging there. And you can do your video chat there. It could not be easier. I am in love with this service. And it is something that honestly has changed many, many lives. We've heard from a lot of listeners who have done this. We've heard from them because they signed up after they heard it here. It couldn't be more satisfying for us because this is a product that we totally believe in.
One of my favorite things about BetterHelp is how it lowers the barrier to entry for doing therapy. And there are many people, I mean, there are many people who don't think they need therapy. And I think we all could benefit from someone to talk to and having those. And so this is a great way when you lower those barriers to entry if for you to go, oh, what is therapy like? What is that like to talk to somebody about what I'm going through? What is it like to get help with these things that I need to process and I just don't have anyone in my life to process them with? This gives you that opportunity. If you've ever had a thought like that, or even if you're just having it now for the first time, to go there and just say, okay, let me try this. Let me see how this works. And I think you will see the benefits right away of having that in your life. So
the beauty of counseling is that it sounds like a cliche. You don't have to do it alone because I couldn't do it on my own. I couldn't be like, oh, I'm feeling depressed. I need to work on this cognitive behavioral thing today and this and that kind of thing, even though I've been on the other side of that. So when you get hooked up with a therapist or a counselor, they will help guide you onto the issues that may help you in the long run. And I couldn't recommend it more. It's betterhelp.com if you're having issues, depression, anxiety, addiction, just really any mental health issue. Go to betterhelp.com/sincast. You get you 10% off your first month, which is meaningful for sure. If you feel like you need it, really, really check it out. betterhelp.com/sincast. We love it. We love it.
On to a movie that will have no controversy whatsoever, Uncut Gems.
I still haven't seen it because I'm afraid.
I don't think you'll like it.
Yeah,
I loved it. Barrett did not, and no. I think you said you didn't.
I don't enjoy it. I don't hate it. I don't think I hate it as much as Barrett does, but I don't like it. For me, I just didn't connect to it. Like the tension worked. The Safdie brothers get tension.
Yes.
So the idea of like it had me on the edge of my seat. It had gripped me. But at the end, I didn't feel anything because I don't think they. For as good as they are at tension, I think they don't get how to connect you to characters. Like, I don't think they get what makes characters work.
And I personally thought that the way they did, especially Adam Sandler, who is a very unlikable, not redeemable character whatsoever, I thought that was their point and their effort for this movie.
Which could be, but the way this movie ends is with an event that I think we're supposed to feel something, but because that's his character, I didn't feel any. I was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
It's tough to justify one way or the other, but I agree that if you don't feel anything for him, then certain things that happen in this movie, you're not going to connect with. But I thought it was actually perfect. It was a perfect thing for that to happen. Like, and I was like getting into it.
It's almost Rube Goldbergian, right? Like, it's almost like a Rube Goldberg machine. You know what the outcome is, but you're still kind of tense. Like, how is the ball going to hit the pin? And is the pin going to hit the,
So
I get that.
So Jeremy, this is Anxiety the movie. That's the thing about this movie is that it is, there are scenes in this where like, there's so much going on and so much like, outlying danger to everything and it's just trying to keep up with it all. When if you're like anxious and anxiety, you know, you're going to feel it. You're going to be like,
even
oh my
not.
God. Yeah, exactly. it was weird. I did not expect to like this. I thought Adam Sandler's character was just a hateable person the entire time. Yet I still was like, this is exactly what they were going for. And I enjoyed exactly what they did with it.
So. I agree. This is the movie that I disliked the most, with liking all of its parts the most.
Right, sure.
All of the performances, Idina Menzel, his girlfriend, I forget her name, Eric Bogosian, like Kevin Garnett is really good
movie. Yeah, he's really good.
I loved every part of this. Like I said, I actually even loved the score too.
Yeah.
It did its job. But I'm like, I just didn't connect with anything. And made it just empty.
Even beyond Adam Sandler, who is the centerpiece of this movie, the other characters feel so, to me, sidelined. Lakeith Stanfield is great in this movie when he's in it, but like, what's his deal? Like, what's his part? Like, what's he supposed to represent?
It could have been,
you know,
expanded for sure.
And the same with Idina Menzel's character. You know, like I get her role in his life in a very paint by numbers kind of way, But like, what's her deal? What's her motive?
If there's one thing about this movie I hate is that they don't really define that, what's going on with her.
At all.
It makes no sense. Like, none of it makes sense. Why is she so beholden to him? Yeah, we know women out there who have like dated gigantic assholes, and we're like, why is that? But in this particular instance, it doesn't work. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I feel like they should have given more screen time to The Weeknd.
They should have. You're correct.
It's the real Weeknd in this. Or the real The Weeknd.
I don't care about him.
It's like the full Weeknd, man.
Yeah.
It's a full Weeknd. It includes even like Friday night.
He gets a boner. He gets a boner?
Yeah, he does.
It's good. I still don't care about him.
Yeah.
It's apparently big.
Yeah. Some Weeknds are harder than others.
Speaking of boners, let's talk about It Chapter 2. Yeah, so is the problem with It Chapter 2 the book, the source material?
It's not helping anything. But I also... The biggest problem to me with this movie is that they feel like they're forcing the chemistry with the adult cast that they had naturally with the kid cast.
Mm.
And it's crazy because they've got such a great adult cast. For the most part, Ben was a little odd to me and Eddie was a little... Well, Eddie was fine. But the other ones are superstars and they just couldn't get the same thing, the magic that they had with the kids.
I agree that the source material is an issue, but for me, the main issue is that in It Chapter 1, the reason I liked it, a person who doesn't usually like horror movies, the reason I enjoyed it is because it was very much daytime horror. It was very much, we're not shying away from showing you things. This is like, if you were standing on the street and watched this clown take out this kid's arm, this is what it would look like, you know, kind of thing. As opposed to all the horror cliches of darkened rooms and stuff jumping out from the corners. And in Chapter 2, it was just all the cliches. It was just all the tropes. Daytime horror went away and we were back in the Conjuring universe or something. Yeah. Like, you know?
There's even a sin in the sins video where it's he's out there remembering the synagogue and all that stuff. And I was like, you like this scene? Good, because it's going to be dark for the next fucking hour of this fucking movie. Pitch black because they're in the cave for like a fucking hour.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, exactly what Aaron said. It's just it is devolved into something that's like every other horror movie at this point.
Yeah.
And I didn't enjoy
it's a
it.
Waste.
The I mean, again, we are it's like I guess it's like a TV series that would try to change casts or something, like an anthology, I guess, but I don't know. It's the fact that we have spent all this time with the kids and they're so great and now they're shitty adults. And they're great actors, but they're having to manufacture this friendship. Oh, you know, it felt like the kids probably spent time with each other before they filmed.
Yeah.
And whereas these guys, they were so busy doing other movies and everything else that there's no.
So I haven't seen the second one because you guys were pretty down on it. Is there any reason to believe that Pennywise isn't coming back in 27 more years or whatever the fuck? Like, what do they do as adults to defeat him that they didn't do as kids?
They make fun of him.
Crush, yeah, they make fun of him. They bully him until he sinks into a thing and I'm melting, and then they crush his heart. And spoiler,
including one of the dumbest insults of all time, which is, "You're nothing but a fucking mummy."
Oh yeah. That was great.
He said it over and over again.
Because they're hurling insults at him like, "You're a joke, you're bullshit, you're all this." And then like, "You're a fucking mummy." And he turns into a mummy. Chris is like, "You're supposed to be scared of a mummy. What the fuck?"
Yeah, exactly.
That's what Tom Cruise hears in his nightmares every night.
It is exactly what he hears. Right. We move on to a movie that only Aaron has seen.
Oh.
It's called The Farewell.
So none of you guys got around to seeing The Farewell. It has been nominated for Best Picture, which is why we're talking about it. I think the American Film Institute put it on their Best Picture list. I think it's worth seeing. I didn't love it as much as most critics did, but it is a true story, which I heard first on This American Life podcast, which is becoming more and more of a thing where great stories are coming from podcasts. And
hey, we got 200 and some episodes right here, Hollywood.
That's right.
That's right.
Let's bring it on.
Yeah.
So, Awkwafina is great in it. She's showing that she can be, you know, a dramatic actor as well.
Can you be a dramatic actor if your name is Awkwafina?
I think so. I think that's what The Farewell shows us.
I think you ought to have to use like a...
What about Ice Cube?
Fuck Ice Cube.
What about fucking Euphoria?
Zendaya?
Zendaya.
Well, she's got a last name, right?
Well, I'm sure Awkwafina has a last name, Nestle.
She named herself after a water.
I think she's got like a depth of talent that we haven't seen yet, like similar to Zendaya.
That's awesome. That's a stupid fake name. I don't understand fake names. Madonna, rappers.
I don't understand why we need to downgrade her performance. Or
I'm just being a crank.
Yeah. I understand.
These kids call themselves.
I understand hating the name. I just don't understand why, like, that's our focus.
No, okay, fine. She's great in this movie. She can do more than whatever she did before this.
I would recommend to watch. It is beautiful. It's a beautiful story. It's definitely one of those where you get to step into a different culture than yours. And the idea of, you know, lying to a loved one about their basic death sentence, you know, based on their health, and just saying, no, you're fine. But then having like a party, which is really kind of a going away party. Like it's a really kind of interesting.
I didn't even realize that was what it was about. I haven't heard anything about this movie other than it's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's the idea of she has been more Americanized because she's it's the story of the director, Lulu Wang, I think is correct. And she was called back to say goodbye to her grandmother, I think. But they don't tell her grandmother that she's dying. They throw it as like a birthday party or some other party, but it's them all saying goodbye to her, and she doesn't even know. So it's part of their culture that they lie to their elders so that every, you know, they just figure
it's part of the culture. Something tells me the elders might have an idea what's going on.
What's this big party happening?
I'm 88 years old. I have a tumor, and they're giving me birthday cake.
Yeah,
something's
quite possible.
The movie that we all saw at Sin Week, Us, Jordan Peele's follow-up to Get Out.
I watched this twice in the last 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah?
Because it's been playing on HBO within the last maybe month or so.
You get to see it with subtitles, finally.
Subtitles help a lot.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how much it helps a lot. Like, she lays it all out.
Mm-hmm.
The first scene.
Yes, she does.
Where they're sitting across from Lupita, she tells her everything. And when we were at Sin Week, I had no idea what she said. I just thought she was... I knew she was speaking,
when,
but I didn't know she
when
was
they
like
first meet up.
I didn't know she was like once upon a time there was a girl and her tether, and when the girl gave birth, the baby was ripped out of the tether's body by herself. I didn't catch any of that the first time because it's impossible to hear. Anyway, this movie gets better for me.
I can imagine because you liked it even when you didn't
understand. I did. Visually, it just had so much going for it visually that first viewing that was interesting, and now it falls apart. Like, if you try and hold up to the Hands Across America conceit here that we've got going on, I don't know if it holds up. But I think I might ultimately enjoy watching this more than Get Out.
Well, you know, ultimately, you just have, I mean, that's, and we came kind of came to this conclusion before, just whether that matters to you or not. You know, like, whether that's going to distract you from enjoying the movie. And for me, the only reason it does distract me is because the movie itself wants to lay out the rules. It wants to say, here's how it all works. Well, okay, but now you're making me think about it. And it actually doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it's.
I think there's a limit to how much they're actually setting up rules. And that's why I think I accept it more. At Sin Week, actually, I think I went to sleep after we watched it thinking it was a C+, B- movie and then woke up thinking it was an A because I thought about it all night. I love this movie. I agree. It gets better every time.
Lupita got robbed. If we want to talk about people getting
totally
robbed,
100%.
The biggest rob in the entire Oscar nominations,
I agree.
She would be, I don't even know how this works. Could she be nominated for both roles?
No.
She would have to be
nominated for
both ones, individually.
Yes.
But I would think it would be not a supporting role. If she had gotten nominated, I think it would be lead actress.
Which one is the lead, though?
She is.
Well, you're not nominated for, you're not nominated for roles. You're nominated for the movie.
Like, for instance, if Peter Sellers got nominated for Doctor Strangelove, it would be for the entire body of work.
It's a performance.
Okay.
It's not a character.
It doesn't have to be individual characters.
Correct. You're not nominated
as a
character.
That's what I was asking. I'm sorry. Yeah. I asked
so if
wrong.
Paul Rudd were nominated for the Two Paul Rudd Show on Netflix, which Paul Rudd would show up to accept the...
Okay. So that was the answer to my question. She could be nominated one time for both roles.
For the performance.
And
because,
I think that's
because
why...
she could get nominated for either one.
But
on
I think that's why she's the biggest snub, is she shows two extremes in one film and very clearly still... sharing some DNA, those two characters, She's mesmerizing in this movie.
Agree.
In fact, Peter Sellers was nominated for Dr. Strangelove.
For all three performances?
Yes, and you're talking about his performance singular, but all the performances.
Because it's for the movie, not the character.
I got you.
So if Jack Black were nominated for Fatties.
Yes. Yeah.
Was
you
he
can
not?
Keep going, man. This is fun.
It is fun.
Was he nominated? Not?
Two popes. You were nominated?
On to something hilarious, Richard Jewell.
You saw this, didn't you, Chris?
I did. I really liked this.
I did too, actually.
I don't know. This is one of those movies that sort of got a lot of, you know, it had a lot of news attached to it before it came out.
Well, and it got taken to task, I think correctly, for the portrayal of the female reporter sleeping with a source to get information when this is a real person who there's no evidence actually did something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think rightfully so it got called to task for that.
And there is also some people reading into it that, well, the FBI got it wrong back then. What about now? What's going on with our world now? And so lot of people are of making that same leap because Clint Eastwood is a famous conservative and everything. But I mean, I didn't look at it that way.
I didn't either.
I just more thought about this is the story that he wanted to tell. And it's about a guy. I mean, it is shameful what happens to this dude. It's this guy Hauser. What's his full name?
Paul Hauser? Paul Walker Hauser?
Definitely Paul Walker.
It's something Hauser. I can't remember the whole name. But this guy is great in this.
Paul Walter Hauser.
That's his name. He's been great in everything that I've seen him in so far. And
by the way, he's hilarious. Just like if you get a chance to catch him in a podcast interview or something, he's quick-witted, funny, clever. Mm-hmm. He's a real good hang.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And this is a character that it's easy to underestimate all the way through because he's got this Southern accent and he's got, you know, he goes way too far with certain things. And then, you know, of course he's going to be seen as a joke all the way through.
He's socially unaware.
Yeah.
You know, we all know these. Well, you know, we all are these people in some ways or another in our lives, you know, but he is that person, you know, that's just socially awkward and. So it'd be easy to understand how he'd be underestimated, accused, those kind of things, but they just didn't do their job.
That actor's from Black Klansman, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yes.
He has a funny moment in Black Klansman because he wants to say something to John David Washington. He wants to say something to him, but he doesn't have the words. He can't, he just wants to look at him and just, I don't know about you. Yeah, you know, and tries to go into the room and he turns around. You know, and he's great in Itania as well.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Galooly.
He's Galooly. Yeah. This is another Sam Rockwell great performance for him.
And he's
not
a racist asshole in this.
He's
one,
not
right?
a racist asshole.
He's one of the sneakily hardest working guys in Hollywood.
And he's good in everything.
He is.
He's even good in that Charlie's Angels 2000.
Thanks for bringing that up. Thanks for that.
We have fun.
Yeah, we do.
I just think this is a well-made movie, and the fact that Clint made it in like 2 months, like it was one of those things as, you know, during award season, probably around October-ish, beginning of November, is when we'll start getting screeners and that kind of stuff. And I think it was mid-November or early November when they're like, oh, actually, Richard Jewell's going to be in the awards race this year. And it's like, because they didn't even know it was going to come out this year.
Wow.
But he just turned it around so fast. It was just like.
And that is his classic Clint, right?
Yeah.
Because he comes from TV and he doesn't do very many like rehearsals.
Yeah. One take Clint.
One take Clint. And he moves on.
That's what my college girlfriend called me.
Yeah, right?
She called you Clint?
Yeah.
Well, when we were role-playing.
Yeah. am I seeing this right? We all saw Hobbs and Shaw?
Oh, God.
Yeah, well, I did.
Actually, no.
I didn't see Hobbs and Shaw.
I think I marked that
Just, all four of us have it marked.
I might have marked it out of spite. I don't think I've seen
it. I think I did too.
I saw the
I think
video.
I did out of accident.
Okay. Okay. So it was just me and Aaron that saw crazy. Hobbs and Shaw then.
We both did it accidentally.
When I looked at it, I was like, no. I know Jeremy didn't just pop this fucking movie.
No, I did not see it.
Yeah, you know, like maybe Barrett did, but
we kind of had this discussion earlier this week.
We did.
Lost a lot of respect for me, didn't you, Chris?
Yeah,
a little bit. No, it's exactly the opposite of what you were saying earlier about a movie that you have that you know you like all the pieces, but you just don't like the movie. This is a movie I know I dislike all the pieces that I somehow had a good time at. But that's almost every Rock movie for me. That's Skyscraper. That's Rampage. That's, you know,
maybe like Fast just and Furious like the Rock. Movies, though, right?
Can
you separate that from like movies?
I don't know. I don't know if I'm able to do that.
Because Rampage definitely sucks.
Yes. Right? Yes. I know. Yes. You're not telling me anything I don't know, but I had fun watching it.
Fair enough.
I hate enough. Movies where in the action, like this really just sort of, this really comes to light when you're sinning the movie more than anything.
Yes.
But I hate it when I'm watching an action scene and I don't know anything about the geography of the place, and it doesn't feel like the characters do, but they're constantly bailed out by things that just come out of nowhere, and it doesn't make any sense. There's a part where Statham is driving his car and he's speeding through this factory area and everything, and he's looking straight ahead the whole time. And then he goes, hold on. And then turns to the hard hairpin turn left. And then suddenly there's this big, like, ramp looking thing that's right there that I'm like, you couldn't have known that was there. and he drives up that thing. There's drones shooting at him. There's all sorts of just nonsense on the screen. He goes through this building and speeds through the building. And then he's like, hold on. And then jumps through this window, assuming that there's another building on the other side.
Yeah, there you go.
He doesn't know there's another building on the other side. Who told you to put the bomb on?
You know what a bomb does, don't you?
But,
you know what a bomb does.
but yeah, I understand that there are people out there who are like, yeah, this is my jam. I'm fine with it, and it's cool.
Yeah, I guess I'm able to forgive it. I'm able to suspend my disbelief because I think the movie understands that it's not trying to do that, right? Like that's part of it. I hate to compare it to Us, but it's kind of that same thing where it's harder for me to forgive Us because I don't think the movie understands that it's not being logical. But I think everybody making Hobbs and Shaw understands they're making a super ridiculous superhero movie. Mm. They're not really trying to do anything, you know, that makes
sense.
There's
a scene where The Rock, like, Captain America.
Oh, yes. Captain America's the helicopter. Yeah, man. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
No time
the
for that.
Gorgeous arms.
Oh, yeah.
Just hanging on.
You really do like
it. Yeah. That's,
I got a thing,
true.
Man.
That's true. Sam Mendes's 1917.
Oh!
I really can't wait to talk about this movie.
Well, good news.
We're here.
Yes. We have arrived.
You raved about it a few weeks ago, and I still wasn't prepared to like it. It just, you know how you said that you couldn't get it up for America or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Indeed.
You really didn't know why.
Yeah.
Same thing with this. For whatever reason, I guess I'm burned out on war movies, which is weird because there hasn't been a whole lot. But I'm like, all right, I've probably seen this before. I have never seen this before. This was gorgeous. It has a twist in the middle that is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Besides the distracting sudden Cumberbatch, this movie was beautiful.
Well, there's sudden everybody. Every checkpoint they have is played by some actor that we know.
A series of unfortunate cameos.
Yeah. So, you know, you have Colin Firth. You have Andrew Scott. You know.
Oh, I forgot. Mark Strong, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So it feels like we were sort of discussing this before this podcast. It feels like war movies have been doing this a lot lately. Like we were talking about The Thin Red Line and how it did that, and The Hurt Locker does that and everything. It's some neat thing that directors have glommed onto.
We need a general here.
Yeah, let's get somebody who will work for scale on this one thing.
Get Bill Gates in here.
But exactly. But 1917, the idea, they make it look like it's all one shot, and the cinematography, I didn't know who did it, but once I saw certain shots, I was like, this is fucking Deakins.
Yeah.
I guarantee you it's Deakins. And he should win again for this, probably, of all the things that I've seen this year. But go and look and find some of the behind the scenes
great.
On this thing.
Oh, it's so great.
Man, that kid was on Kimmel or somebody, and that kid that does the final run towards the camera, and he wasn't supposed to fall down.
Yeah.
Like
when he got knocked over by the guy, when he ran into the guy.
He gets knocked over twice.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wasn't supposed to get knocked over once. He wasn't supposed to fall down at all. But he says, we had a rule because everything on this was such a big, huge production and we did all these rehearsals.
Keep running.
You do not stop acting until you hear the word cut. So he got knocked down and he got up and kept running and he gets knocked down again. And it adds so much urgency and like truth to that run. It's surprising to me they didn't script it for him to fall down.
What's even more incredible to me is the stuff that's manufactured that still feels seamless.
Yeah.
Because of the tricks they have to do with the camera, there's a great behind the scenes where it shows the side by side of that run with how they're moving the camera and how they're hand holding it, and then they have to move it to a dolly. So he's coming up out of the ditch, and because they have to handhold and get it locked into the dolly, he takes a second to look at the spectacle around him, because he can't keep running because they've got to wait for that camera to get on that dolly.
That's interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
But you never noticed that seam. It's just part of the great performance, but it certainly was for the ability to get that camera locked in.
Yeah, this reminds me a lot of Mission Impossible Fallout, in the sense that, you know, I can appreciate it as a work of art, but I can appreciate it on a whole nother level at just the fucking planning and coordinating. The directing of that movie must have evolved. You know, like, Mendez didn't have to set all these challenges for himself, but he did. And not only does he pull it off, it's a fucking home run, man. I have so much respect for this movie.
Yeah.
I truly believe the best art happens in a constrained environment. And the idea that you give yourself boundaries, and that's where some of the most creative stuff happens. One of the reasons I love Nolan films is he gives himself these constrained boundaries to the type of movies he's doing, whether it be the way time works or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then he has to figure it out. And so you have to make those paradigm shifts, right? And so that's I think that's happening here in 1917 too.
That's the thing that I keep hearing from filmmakers every time I hear somebody talk about a movie, is that directing is problem solving, and that, you know, that there's a lot of things that they, you know, they plan for, but then there's always something that just screws everything up. And so a lot of the times where they have to do that last minute change or whatever, and they make it better somehow because of that.
Yep.
You know, so I really enjoy that type of thing. 1917 is a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
On to probably the best theater experience we've all had this year, except for Aaron.
Except for me. I wasn't there with you.
John Wick, Chapter 3, Parabellum.
Was not. What did you expect from this movie?
Like everything, like the other John Wicks, right?
So I think we both had, or we all had, low expectations, camaraderie, and plus it's a great movie.
Yeah.
And like, all
it's
that
a fun buddy movie too. Oh, the fact that y'all went together and everything, like, I totally get it.
Yeah. I mean, it's the funniest movie of the year. Just because
it's
pretty funny. Granted, if you just looked at our row laughing, that's the funniest movie that was produced all year long.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is because the action is funny and unexpected. But man, for me it was a total leap from John Wick 2, even John Wick 1, which were, I always was frustrated when those movies were getting called some of the best modern action movies, because I think the Bourne movies are better than the first two John Wicks, and I think the Raid movies. And then John Wick 3 comes along and is like, hey, you like those Raid movies? We're going to do all of that for the whole 2 hours, and you're going to love it. We're going to do a horse kick, and it's going to be, they're going to have two fucking killer dogs, and God, that movie is just, I love it. I love it so much.
I
almost wanted to vote for it.
Yeah, I definitely didn't have more fun watching a movie this year, for sure. Now, some of that was the group aspect of it, but I, you know, watching it again during Sin's time for it, I felt like I had that same experience all over again. Aaron, however, he hated it.
I did not. I really enjoyed it. For me, it's a series of diminishing returns with the franchise. And so what I loved about this franchise is increasingly becoming not interesting to the people doing this franchise. It is evident now that from the beginning, the most interesting part of this was the action part of this for them.
Mm-hmm.
great. That's great. But that's not what made the first one an excellent movie to me. So I think if they had all been like this, I'd probably be right there with you and just, you know, like the Raid movies or whatever. But because the first one felt so meaningful and purposeful to me, there's space in that first movie. Sure. You know, there's emotion, there's character development, there's world building. And then in the second one, you know, there's a lot more world building and a little less of the character stuff and still the action. And this one, it's, for me, it just felt like it's pretty much just action.
First one was emotional.
Yeah.
I mean, the dog and a little bit of the Moynihan, but like...
The Moynihan.
There's this whole moment with... who is it that plays the friend? The car shop...
Leguizamo. Like,
yeah, Leguizamo. He has this stuff with Leguizamo that is all about character, and it's a really interesting scene towards the beginning of that movie that just these future movies aren't interested in. And again, that's fine. I had a great time. It just, when I look at it from an above perspective, there's a bit of disappointment for me as a John Wick fan as to where it heads. But I can see the difference.
The desert and all that.
Did you have a better time in this or Hobbs and Shaw?
Oh, this, for sure. Okay. 100% this.
Yeah. Otherwise, we'll have to ask you to leave, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
No, this is, to me, and this may sound a little sacrilegious or whatever, but
it is.
But to me, this is the best version of the Fast and Furious Hobbs and Shaw mindset of let's just do crazy stuff on screen, make it look cool, and have fun with superheroes. Like that's, you know, or superheroes who are also supposed to be human. This is the best version of that. And I think that's because these directors, who I think technically are co-directors but weren't allowed to call themselves co-directors. I forget how they had
on
to go
the John
through
Wick movie?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure because nowadays like team directors are
everywhere.
Common.
Yeah,
I think on the first one, for whatever reason, the guild wouldn't let them call themselves co-directors.
Yeah, that was the thing that had been going on with the Coen brothers for the longest time. And I think they still just put Joel Coen on there.
Yeah. Anyways, that is beside the point. But you can tell that they are doing what they love and that they're really good at it.
Yeah.
And that's, I think this is the best version of that movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Another movie that only Aaron and I have seen called Hustlers. So I thought this was perfectly fine. I didn't think it was great in any way. Did you think J-Lo should have gotten nominated for this?
I don't. I think I'm right with you. I think this is a really good movie. But I found a little bit of the same problem I have with Goodfellas as in this movie, where it's just like, I see what you're doing here, but I'm having trouble connecting to rooting for these people without also understanding the consequence of their humanity.
It is justifying their actions because of the world they live in. And it's easy for us to go, well, it has to be fair, damn it. Like, they can do this because they're making it fair, and you're still just committing crimes.
Yeah. I will tell you, I loved, I don't remember her name. Who directed this movie? If somebody could look that up while I'm talking, but she shoots. This is going to sound weird. If you want to see a striptease shot with
Scafaria,
if you want to see a striptease shot with a female gaze instead of a male gaze, watch this movie.
Sure,
no, it's, I don't want to see that.
Yeah, exactly.
I did. I thought it was fascinating. I really when J-Lo is stripping in this movie, I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was gorgeous.
Wait, J-Lo is a stripper in this movie?
Yes. Oh yeah, full on stripping. Yeah.
We'll see, guys.
Yeah. Yep, and she still looks like she's 35.
You know, I never had a J-Lo thing, but oddly, the single most vivid sex dream I've ever had in my life was with J-Lo.
Really?
And I was her kept boy up in the penthouse, and she would go do interviews and just come back and fuck me. This was right around that green flower cleavage jet dress she wore 20 years ago.
That was her moment. Yeah.
Most vivid sex dream I've had in my whole life.
Yeah, I can see it. I mean, I definitely had a J-Lo thing.
Well, good to know. To finish my thought about the female gaze. So the way the camera shoots it, it feels so much less salacious. You know, you really can feel the difference it makes when a female looks at, I think stripping is considered quote unquote sex work by definition or whatever. But when they shoot this kind of, more sexual, sensual thing than when a male does.
Well, it's not even just that. If you just look at Wonder Woman and Justice League.
Right, totally.
And how those two directors shot Gal Gadot.
Yeah.
And it's night and day.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World.
Next.
Yeah, that's fine.
Actually, I really liked it, but it's you know, it's not really notable.
Wasn't this you and me, Jeremy, on the? I thought you saw this with me.
Maybe I did write on this. It's hard for me sometimes to remember which ones I wrote on, but yeah, it could have been.
Okay. I don't remember much about it other than
I think I did write on this.
They're trying to move that town, and that's all.
I love these movies. I think looking back, this will be an underappreciated franchise. The first one I think is groundbreaking for DreamWorks. Mm-hmm. I think it was really the first great. Oh, we can make emotional, meaningful movies too. Animated movie that they did,
mm-hmm.
And then two was really good, not quite as good as one. And then this one is, I think, really well done. It suffers from trying to stuff too many characters into the movie, which a lot of these sequels do.
And it's Wally all over again at some point.
Yes, there is that as well. So, but I enjoy it. I just, you know, there's not really a lot to it.
Yeah. The Lego Movie 2, the second part.
I talk about fucking forgettable.
Yeah.
I've seen this movie twice, and I still don't remember anything about it.
Yeah.
I just know it reduced Batman, like Lego Batman, to rubble.
Yes.
Like, in terms of everything that was good about him in the first Lego movie and in Lego Batman, and they just made him an idiot.
This one changes the narrator, the storyteller, to the sister.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be something really interesting, but I don't know if it got there. Really.
But here's the weird part. We already know the twist from the end of the first one, and yet they kind of try to hide it in this one again.
They do.
It's weird to me. Just like embrace it. If we know what's going on here, make it an actual part of the movie. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That was a little weird to me.
Well, I don't think we're Lord and Miller actively hands-on for this one like they were with the first one.
I don't think so. I think they may have been producers. I don't think they directed it.
I think they were off trying to make Han Solo.
Yeah. But yeah, forgettable is right. Like I don't remember much.
Which is
other
funny.
Than that,
there's a song called "The Song That Gets Stuck Inside Your Head."
And
that I can barely remember that song.
The Secret Life of Pets 2. Only Barrett has seen this.
Speak.
I mean, it sucks.
Hot garbage.
Yeah, it does. It's three different stories that are loosely tied into each other, passed off as like a feature thing, and this will be. Really, really forgettable. Like people have probably already forgotten that this movie was made.
All right,
including me. All right, even though I'm talking about it right now.
The only person who's seen The Upside is Aaron.
Ooh. Yeah, we don't need to spend a lot of time. It's on here because it made more than $100 million, which I think was a huge surprise.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
is this that Cranston thing?
Yeah, Bryan Cranston and
Kevin Hart.
And it's fine, but my understanding, I don't think I've seen the original.
Oh, the original's fantastic.
That's what I've heard. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was like, oh, I should go watch the original, and I still haven't done it.
Yeah.
But it was fine. And Cranston's great, by the way. He's such a great actor. Mm-hmm. I think he elevates this quite a bit.
Yeah. Knives Out.
Ooh.
This is a movie that has the distinction for me of being, I think, the only movie I've seen in theaters three times.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. And not because I was just like, I got to go see that again. It was just like, I watched it. And then Barrett was like, I'm going to go see that. And I was like,
yeah, it was right after recording.
I want to see that again. And then I went to, see my family in Arkansas, and they were like, you want to see, what movies do you want to see? And they threw out like Jumanji and all this stuff. And I was like, well, I've seen Jumanji. Don't like that. I've seen Knives Out twice. I will see that again.
Yeah.
And so that's what we ended up watching. And my mom liked it.
Awesome.
And that was exciting. And everybody in my family loved it.
It's got wide appeal. Because it's got something for everyone. It's got the big audacious performances. It's got the whodunit aspect. It's got the humor. It's got the visuals that are... My favorite part of this movie is where Rian Johnson switches to handheld when Ana de Armas is walking out of the...
Yes.
With the families all
what
crazy.
What a choice, right?
And then all of a sudden, like, it gets all squiggly vision and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's little details like that makes this movie endlessly rewatchable. I fucking love it. My 11-year-old son... watched it with me, mm-hmm. and he loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like your son's been 11 for like 4 years.
He's about to turn 12 next week.
No, at least he's aging. at some rate.
He's doing that Benjamin Button thing.
You keep him smell.
Yeah. I think Ana de Armas was snubbed for Oscar.
I would agree with that.
She is the glue on this movie, which is amazing considering how many great stars are in it. But it's been a while since I've seen a movie this fun, John Wick was probably the funnest experience I had in a movie theater, and this would have to be right up there with it.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the same group experience with Knives Out, but I guess the family, that was a good experience, but God, I love this movie so much.
Me too.
I do as well. It is my favorite movie of the year, which is different, you know, than the best movie of the year. But as far as like one, I always consider that question, like, what's your favorite to be? If you had them all in front of you, which one are you most excited to put in right now and watch just because you love watching it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's Knives Out for me of the movies this year. I have so much fun with it. Benoit Blanc is one of my favorite new characters invented in such a long time. I'm so excited that they're going to do more Benoit Blanc stuff.
Yeah, there was
a hole in my donut.
Yeah, that was exciting. I saw that article 2 or 3 weeks ago that said that he was already trying to write that second one.
Yeah,
and there was talk about maybe Daniel Craig doing a different accent in every movie.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I don't know if I like that, but that's definitely interesting.
I don't think it was Ryan Johnson that came up with it. It was somebody on Twitter who said something.
Like he's like, uses the accent to get the information he wants for the case that he's doing.
Yeah.
That's kind of fascinating.
That would be beautiful.
Yeah.
That would be
beautiful. KFC.
Like a linguistic Columbo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It will be interesting to see if he finally falls on the side of just doing that or just we want to give people what they want. But anyway, yeah, Knives Out. I love that movie so much.
Mm-hmm. You want some more cookies? My family is now using that as shorthand, like quoting it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You want some more cookies?
A movie that's just as good, Godzilla King of the Monsters.
I just watched part of this last night.
Yeah?
And then I got bored and turned it off.
Yeah, it's a snooze fest. I do like the colors in this. I like the mood of it more so than any other monster movie that I've seen recently.
It feels like 95% of the movie is shot of a scientist saying something, shot of a monster doing something, shot of a scientist saying something, shot of a monster. Just
dude, seriously, this movie pissed me off so much. The whole thing where like monsters are about to fight and we're like, oh hell yeah, we're about to see some monsters fight, god damn it, and then it cuts to somebody, they're about to fight.
Oh my god.
And it's like it's always going back and cutting to the shitty humans in this whole thing, and we don't give a fuck what happens to them,
and all they're doing is looking out of windows.
And it's like, I understand.
Oh my god, Zilla.
I understand that you probably didn't have the money to make it where the monsters are front and center for most of the movie, but
then don't make that movie.
But don't make the movie then.
they had to because they had already made Kong Skull Island, and they have to get this whole thing rolling.
You have to get it rolling, man.
You have to.
They haven't gotten it rolling.
Every mega franchise has its Thor Dark World.
There you go.
You gotta break a few Thor Dark Worlds if you want to make an Endgame souffle.
Yes, you do. On to Pokemon Detective Pikachu.
What a delight.
Yeah, it's a fun movie.
What a delight. I've seen this twice, at least, maybe more. Kid's a big Pokemon fan.
Mm-hmm.
It's delightful.
Yeah.
It's
great.
More so than I thought
delightful.
It was going
to
be.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think Ryan Reynolds just brightens up everything that he's in. Part of the reason I did enjoy Hobbs and Shaw was the sudden Ryan Reynolds.
There you go.
And especially because I didn't even know he was in the movie. That was like a surprise kind of fun thing. Mm. So, yeah, I think he brightens this up quite a bit and makes it a lot of fun.
The third in the M. Night Shyamalan Unbreakable series, Glass.
Fuck off.
Yeah,
I was talking to the movie, by the way, not you.
I
guys.
Was already given the double finger,
and it was, and you have the right to tell me to fuck off or even bringing Glass up. But yeah, man, remember back when Unbreakable came out, and we were like, oh, it'd be awesome if he came out with a sequel to that, and then he comes out with Split, and Split's okay, and now Glass, which is less than okay.
I feel like we overinflated how good Split
split was.
Well, it's understandable, though, right? No one has ever done a surprise backdoor sequel before. Yeah. Am I wrong in saying that? Like, that's quite a trick to pull off.
Yeah.
Where at the end of the movie, you reveal, guess what? This is a sequel to a movie you love. Like, mind blown. I can't think of a theater experience more energizing to me that I've ever had.
I remember
that
you
moment.
Came out of it and you private messaged me, sequel or see Split as soon as you can. And less than 2 hours later, it was spoiled for me.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. One of my first thoughts was for you.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to give it away, but I was trying to figure out how to emphasize to you, please get there so you can
you
have this experience.
To embargo yourself on Twitter. If you're going to see a movie, just stop being on Twitter.
You guys are misunderstanding. When I have spoiled myself by reading too much, for sure. But both in that instance and with Rise of the Skywalker, people have sent me emails or private messages on Reddit seeming to be, hey, Jeremy, a big time fan, blah, 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 raise a Palpatine.
All of internet.
Yeah, but see, I can't do that. I can't go off the internet.
So I think it's understandable because of that moment, that energizing moment, that we all elevated it to more than it was. I still think Split's an okay movie. I like Glass more than you guys do. I don't think it's a great movie.
There's a movie I would like to see a female director shoot.
Sure.
Is Split, because that movie makes me uncomfortable.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even Glass makes me uncomfortable with the young girls in tight clothes being like the camera work is a little uncomfortable there. A couple of I'm not saying M. Night's a pervert.
Mm-hmm. The thing for me is, I think M. Night, and again, this doesn't make the movie great, but I think it maybe explains what it is. M. Night made the movie he always wanted to make. For him, it never was about the same things, I don't think, as it was for the people who loved these movies as superhero movies. They were never really superhero movies to him. They were character studies. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the character study he wanted to do on these characters. And so even though it's ridiculous the way that David Dunn dies is ridiculous, to him that means something, you know, that symbolizes something to him. So I think he made the movie he wanted to make.
He wanted to make a shitty movie.
I think you could take
and
it
that
way.
And you
know
what? Yes. He's laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah.
Because that movie made a bunch of money.
It did make a lot of money.
Wish, he funded it himself.
I wish the whole Sarah Paulson thing wasn't even dreamed of in this movie.
Yep.
I hate secret organizations who are out there that are like, we know there's superheroes out there. We want to put an end to that.
That's right. As soon as this guy walks out of that restaurant, we're going to have the secret meeting.
Oh, my God. That's maybe one of the dumbest scenes of the year, probably.
Wait for it. Okay, he's gone.
Like, how did that fucker get in there?
Dude.
Put somebody on the door.
Dude, I was so confused at that scene when I first saw it. Because he touches her. And usually he sees somebody committing a crime of some sort. But all this is a fucking gathering. There's no crime there. I mean, yeah, she's doing some evil shit, but why that one?
Yeah.
Like, show her doing evil shit, not getting a restaurant meeting together. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Did anybody else like this as much as I do? This is my number three of the year.
I probably liked it as much as you.
Oh, it's so good. And yeah. I'm not usually a Quentin guy. I like Inglourious Basterds quite a bit for actually many of the same reasons I like this. I like his alternative history idea. I think that's really interesting to see his ability to make movies. Movies are a time machine to him. He like legitimately feels like he can not only go back in time and experience what it was like to be in a different time, but also change the things that he wants to change. Like, that's a fascinating concept to me.
Yeah.
And I think there's more hope and joy and beauty in this movie than I've ever seen him put in his movies before.
Wow.
It's I really love this
movie. Yeah,
I agree with you.
I did too, and there are parts that probably don't need to be as long as they are and whatever, but yeah, I really got into the whole like him parodying and sending a love letter to this era in film and everything. The way DiCaprio has to do that one take so many times and all the
this movie's funny.
There's so many funny things in it, and
Julia Butters is great and hilarious. The girl.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Oh, she's so great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now they're going to make that television show for real.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I know that he shot like a bunch of footage for that, mm-hmm. just that TV show in the movie.
Yeah.
And I guess he got excited about making that.
Yeah.
That's how Tarantino is.
Yep.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the movie trailers we saw in there would be something that he'd want to make.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
That ranch scene is pure Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's so tense, so beautifully done. It just owns you for like 20 minutes.
Well, because we don't know who this Brad Pitt character is,
yeah.
in the story of Charles Manson and everything.
Right.
Anything can happen.
Exactly.
There. And it's not one of those where you're like, oh yeah, I remember a classic death happened at this ranch, yeah. or whatever. It's nothing like that. So you sit there and go, it could be anything.
Yep. And yeah, it's the beauty of it.
You see this?
Mm-hmm.
You saw this? Okay. What did you think?
Yeah. I think I'm having a Tarantino problem lately, because the last, they've just been waning for me ever since Jamie Foxx.
Oh, Django?
Yeah. I didn't really dig Hateful Eight.
Yeah. I can see that.
I think it's just I need to go do something and come back.
I think this movie's better than Django and better than Hateful Eight.
Oh, for sure.
And it gets close to Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, I need to watch it.
But
again.
It's not Inglourious Basterds either. I don't think.
Yeah, it didn't hook me. I need to give it another shot.
Okay. So Shazam.
Mm-hmm.
Good movie. I saw it last night.
This is probably, it's not a part of the DCEU, right? Or does that even exist anymore?
They wink at Batman and Superman pretty hard in that movie.
No. But the current DCEU, like the Justice League DCEU.
I don't think anybody knows what that is.
Okay. Yeah, they made a conscious choice not to tie it in directly with Henry Cavill.
Okay.
There was talk about having him do that cameo.
They're going to put The Rock in a Black Adam villain spinoff, and then mm-hmm. they're going to have The Rock and Shazam probably anchor, maybe with Reeves Batman moving forward.
Down with it.
Yeah, I thought Zachary Levi was really fun.
Really good.
He's really good. Now, I didn't see the Sins video on this, but did you guys make a comparison to Big in this at all?
Yeah, I was so busy.
I'm sure
recreating the director's
the movie
sin.
Is Big, yeah. essentially,
oh, yeah.
and there's even a keyboard.
Yeah, that was me and you.
Yeah, yeah. There was even a keyboard. I think we mentioned in the
yeah,
keyboard.
Yeah, we totally, because that's the where Mark Strong punches him out the window, right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, we totally did. Something.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, you know, I bet they said something about it. It has to be, because this movie is Big all over again. And yes, Zachary Levi does a great 14-year-old kid.
Yeah,
you know.
Did we make a it's like Big without the statutory rape joke? Is that
Did we make that joke?
Sounds like something. Is there any confirmation they actually slept together in Big?
They were in separate beds.
He goes on the top bunk.
Yeah.
I never got the impression they actually slept together, or he would have said something about it.
He gets to touch a boob.
No. They don't sleep together that night, but they sleep together later on.
Oh, maybe you're right.
Yes. Because I saw it.
That is problematic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think multiple times.
All right. You mean multiple orgasms?
Yep. Yes. Both. Yes.
Okay. Yes, for sure. I'm going to kind of skip over Dumbo and Maleficent Mistress
Thank
Evil.
You.
Yeah. No worries about that.
When we did this episode yesterday, I was a dumbass and forgot Ford v. Ferrari on the podcast. I saw it, and I was like, we're going to get to that at some point, and I must have just gone directly underneath it when we went back, because I was kind of going back and forth. I didn't want it to be a whole bunch of box office hits, then a whole bunch of Oscars,
right.
and then back, you know, I wanted to sort of mix it all up. So I kept going back and forth on this list, and I was doing pretty good, except for the fact that I didn't do Ford v. Ferrari and the whole thing. So... anyway, Ford v. Ferrari is a very good movie. James Mangold directed it. It's awesome. Matt Damon and Christian Bale are great in it. And I went and made sure I got Aaron Dicer's thoughts. He was the only other person in the room who had seen it anyway. And he said, I really liked it. I think Mangold trusts the audience in ways I really appreciate. I love how Bale is transformative, even in normal roles. He's an incredible actor. And he is. He's fantastic in this. He has a way of playing an everyman where you're just like, you don't really see Christian Bale really in the performance and everything.
He's British in this, right?
I think so. Yes.
You don't see a lot of British Christian Bale, you know?
No, you don't. And it's good to see British Christian
Bale. Prestige is good.
Yeah, Christian Bale. Exactly. Yeah. So, I had to mention that because I thought it was a glaring omission from the entire year in review. So, on to the static. let me get to the wild cards, and I'll go with yours first. Booksmart.
Yeah, baby. Mm-hmm. This held my number one slot almost all the way up until 1917.
Yeah.
I've watched it like six times now. Those two girls have such good chemistry. Even the part that was in the trailer when she's picking her up in the beginning of the movie from school and she starts dancing and they're both dancing. She's like, are we even going to go to school or what? I just love it, love it, love it. It's super funny, super charming. It's short, not a big commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I can tell, no one in the world has seen this movie.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So get out there and go watch it.
The side characters are some of my favorites too.
Oh,
especially the dude that hosts the murder mystery party. I mean, from the very beginning, he comes in to make that announcement. He's like, I learned this when I was in Barcelona.
I love Booksmart too. I need to watch it again though.
So good.
But I really, really enjoyed it. Apollo 11.
Yeah. Ooh. Snub.
Yeah.
So I will just say this. I think I figured it out because they snubbed Won't You Be My Neighbor mm-hmm. last year or whichever one it is. Welcome.
Oh, no. Mr.
How to Get Ahead.
Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
By wearing
which one's
a sweater
which?
With puppets.
Anyways, the documentary.
Won't You Be My Neighbor is the documentary.
Okay, yeah. So I was right. Okay, so they snubbed the documentary last year. And yeah. I think what it is whoever's nominating these documentaries, they want that, like, social, meaningful kind of stuff. There's nothing socially meaningful about the Apollo 11 documentary.
Ooh.
It's just incredibly made, you know, archival filmmaking, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think that's what it is. Because
I think the biggest miracle of Apollo 11 was that footage was just fucking sitting around somewhere in like a box, mm-hmm. and somebody found it and was like, "Oh, this exists.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll put it out there."
Queen and Slim.
Yeah. Anybody seen that?
I haven't seen it.
I've seen it.
You liked it?
I did. I didn't love it.
I didn't either. It played too conventional for me once, but it has a killer setup. Great actors.
Ready or Not.
Yeah, Ready or Not.
This is fun.
Yeah.
It's a fun movie.
Super
what
fun.
What a surprise.
This is a good, this would be a good double feature with Knives Out.
Ooh.
Well, I was thinking Parasite is also very similar.
Yeah,
like all three
of
these really kind of, we talk about that Eat the Rich thing. All three of them are Eat the Rich kind of movies. Like it's really interesting. So it's been that year.
Also, that girl could not look more like Margot Robbie if she tried. And
Samara
I know
Weaving.
It's not Margot Robbie, but forever I'm going to confuse her with Margot Robbie.
She's poised for like a big breakout if she's not already, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, you just put her in the right movie. I think she'll skyrocket, but she's quietly had this already pretty good career mm-hmm. and everything. But Ready or Not is real fun.
Yeah, I got to see that.
The Kid Who Would Be King, which I didn't give a time of day. I remember seeing the trailer. I didn't want to see this movie at all.
No, well, your life will not be changed by watching this movie. But it's super charming. And the kid actor is Andy Serkis's son.
Oh, okay.
And he's really charming. And it's just kind of a play on the King Arthur and modern, it's, you know, Connecticut Kid and King Arthur's Court or what have you.
mm-hmm.
What?
Sorry, I thought you got that.
And he's, you know, he basically comes to believe he's actually the true heir to Arthur. I had a lot of fun. Did you see this?
I loved it.
I thought it was really fun.
I think this is a really, you know, what's interesting about it is that it kind of presents itself as just this typical family movie about King Arthur. And it's got almost this real subversive sense of humor
to it.
And then I was like, oh, it's Joe Cornish, which, you know, makes a little bit of sense. It's really fun.
Yeah.
And it takes some turns I wasn't expecting.
And the kid that plays Merlin, Patrick Stewart plays old Merlin, but the kid who plays young trying to blend in Merlin is hysterical. I don't know if I've seen him in anything before this, but
he's
really funny.
Well, I'll have to give that a try sometime.
I would still recommend Paddington 2 ahead of this.
Okay.
But they're
agreed.
Both great.
Yeah. going on to Barrett's wild cards, we have Always Be My Maybe.
Ooh,
this was a lot of fun.
It was, and Randall Park plays a very Untraditional protagonist.
Mm-hmm. Chris and I's buddy, Randall Park.
Yeah, right. Man. We hung out with Randall, man. With him,
dude.
Man.
The
and
music,
Constance Wu.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, the music in this movie is surprisingly really, 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 really good.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Keanu steals the show, but it's just top to bottom good.
Netflix, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Dr. Sleep, which is a movie that I thought was a masterpiece for an hour and then sucked.
It's a frustrating movie, right? Because, mm-hmm. boy, is there promise there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of promise. That scene in the mind library where there's the twist or whatever blew me away, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rebecca Ferguson will blow you away with her whole performance.
Mm-hmm.
I'll rewatch this, even though I know where to stop it.
Yeah.
Just because that last half hour, as we've said, is just not what appeals to us. But Rebecca Ferguson throughout this movie is spectacular.
Hmm. Yeah.
You would like this just for her, I think.
I do like me some Rebecca.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Midsummer. I saw this in Vegas, and I had a bad experience in my auditorium. This was not weed related. This was people being assholes related.
I can't imagine, too.
Yeah, it's the fucking people just talking and just saying random shit to each other with not even whispering.
No, and this is like the worst movie for that to happen because there's so much going on, especially in the background. William, the guy who plays Chidi on Good Place.
Oh,
William
Jackson Harper?
Yeah. He's got some of the funniest lines in the movie's fucking funny. He's got some of the funniest lines in the movie, but it's as he's off screen or walking off screen.
I was not expecting how much of a comedy this actually is.
Oh, it's
yeah,
so good.
It is.
I love this movie so much, and it's only growing in my estimation.
And
it's brilliant filmmaking. Yeah. It really is.
Florence Pugh. This is a great year for her.
She's poised for a big breakout.
Absolutely.
Did you see Fighting With My Family?
I haven't seen that.
She's great in that, too. That's a surprisingly good movie.
Yeah. It actually makes me semi-excited about this Black Widow movie because she's playing mm-hmm. Scarlett Johansson's sister. And, like, you throw in Emmy Rossum in there, you have the smoky voice trio there. Florence Pugh is great in this. I keep talking about how in this movie I just felt like she was so real. She didn't feel like an actress or anything. Mm-hmm. Just felt like a real person that, you know, that you run into all the time. And this movie, I will give a second chance because I had a bad experience watching it. I could see the brilliance, though, when I saw it. It's just that it wasn't. I was sitting there just annoyed and worried about other things.
You talk about daytime horror.
Yeah.
This is the daytimiest daytime horror there is. Like, it is sunshine and all, you know, it's all right there for good and bad.
It is. Yeah. No, it's just it has something for everyone. If you're a horror movie fan, it has something for you. If you like comedy, if you like drama, like you talk about real, like she goes through every emotion imaginable in mm-hmm. this.
Well, and you know, the thing that always gets me is metaphor. And this movie is full of symbolism and metaphor. It's brilliant.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to really race through these. The Perfection, maybe the most fucked up movie of the year.
I liked The Perfection.
Yeah, I liked it a
really
lot.
I really did.
Yesterday, I never saw this.
Surprisingly good because it's more than just the one note of him remembering the Beatles. There's one twist in here that I think is absolutely brilliant. This is Danny Boyle kind of getting back to being Danny Boyle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Danny Boyle. Now on to my wild cards. Happy Death Day to You.
Yeah.
Thought this was a lot of fun.
It is fun.
What a surprise.
It's actually maybe possibly better than the first one.
It takes it in a completely unexpected direction.
Yeah.
For me,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was not expecting that. Yeah. I loved
and,
that.
And nobody watched it, and we're not going to see the third movie.
Yeah.
Which is really sad, but I thought this was a movie that was really fun and deserved mention. Long Shot. Did you see this?
Mm-hmm. Also called Cum Shot.
Cum Shot, yes. I understand what you guys are saying, like by the end of the movie, that you know, that where she is basically saying, yeah, I'm dating Seth Rogen. Yeah, you know, yeah, Cheddar Bob shut his side of something. Yeah, I understand that, but I really enjoyed it for the most part, like through.
It's one of the movies I use as an example of how Charlize elevates material. She is so good in this movie, mm-hmm. and I can't think of the last time I saw her be bad in something. Like, She's so great.
Yeah.
She makes movies like, you know, Long Shot or Atomic Blonde, like actual good movies.
Or The Devil's Advocate.
Or The Devil's Advocate.
Yeah,
Devil's Advocate.
And I don't think we ever talked about Bombshell, but I didn't really like that movie very much, but you guys kind of did.
I kind of like Bombshell.
Honey Boy, which was Shia LaBeouf sort of trying to make a comeback, but Lucas Hedges is really good in it, and I mean, it's a sort of a theme we've been seeing lately of people having some sort of experience with putting their own life experiences into a movie.
Yeah, it's kind
of
like autobiopic. Yeah, you know, like it's interesting in that way.
Yeah, The Lighthouse deserves mention, even though it's a crazy fucking ass movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I love it.
Yeah.
Oh no,
you've gone from I don't know what's going on
within the span of like 3 hours.
Yeah.
lots of squelching.
I'll tell you, Lighthouse. before we move on, this has some of the most like horrifying imagery. One of the shots of Willem Dafoe towards the end is absolute nightmare fuel, mm-hmm. but it's also gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
You may like this movie. No. You can't get it out of your head.
See Midsommar before you see The Lighthouse.
Oh, I guess never.
Oh my God, Jesus! What a double feature. and then The Report, which was on Amazon Prime.
Great year for Adam Driver, right?
Yeah, Adam Driver's great in this. This is the investigation into whether or not we tortured people after the Iraq War, and we did.
We did.
Aaron's. Yeah. Wait a minute. You didn't hear how World War II ended. We won.
Yay! USA.
USA. On to Aaron's wild cards. Alita: Battle Angel.
Ooh. I think it was worth talking about just for the fact that this is one of those movies that builds a world I am very interested in, but doesn't necessarily do it well enough.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I would love to see a sequel to this just to see if they can get it better, you know, get it right. Cause I love this world building here.
Is it, it's a spoiler, but it's sudden Edward Norton at the end, right?
Yeah. They were obviously looking for a franchise. I just don't know if it, you
I
know,
hope they do too. Have you seen this?
Yeah. I wrote Sins with Danae. Right. This is, for whatever reason, I have this and Mortal Engines on this in a very similar place.
Oh, interesting.
In that I didn't feel like this is way better, I think, than Mortal Engines. Yeah. But I didn't feel like either one of those movies did enough to set up their world building to compel me to care very much. You know, if they made a sequel, fine. But they're not going to.
Yeah, no, I don't think they will.
A movie that I definitely will have to give a second chance, Ad Astra, which I thought was good for the most part. I was confused in some other parts. And then there were some things, some odd additions to it that I didn't really like either. But I'm hearing a lot of people who seem to like this movie a lot.
I think critically it's really getting a lot of this is the underlooked movie of the year. Like a lot of critics are saying not enough people are paying attention to Ad Astra. And I understand that. I definitely loved it. For me, a lot of that was the metaphor of God and man and, you know, religion. And a lot of these moments that take people out of the movie where he's, you know, giving his stats, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever, to me, right off the bat, felt like legalistic rote church, you know, like these are the prayers that are like, thank you God for this day, here's the list of things I want, you know, that kind of stuff. And then he moves on through the movie and he suddenly learns to talk to his father as a human being, and then he gets to his father and realizes his father wasn't all he was cracked up to be. I mm-hmm. truly think this is a movie about somebody losing their faith, mm-hmm. And understanding that their foundation is no longer in their faith in a heavenly father, but in humanity itself. So I found it fascinating.
Yeah. Then we have Klaus, which was funny. Jeremy mentioned this movie. It came on, was it Disney Plus?
Netflix.
Netflix, okay. And when he mentioned this, I had no idea it was going to be like, oh, possibly an Academy Award nominee or
something.
Well,
it won. It won the big animation films that happened this last week. It won Animated Movie of the Year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Toy Story is going to be very good. The Oscars.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Triple Frontier, which was Netflix. I didn't see that.
Fuck that movie. That movie.
I liked it.
Oh, God. I did
movie
not.
Can eat a dick.
I feel like that was six movies. They shot all six of them, and they edited it down to one.
And
I liked all six movies. I thought they were fun.
The final wild card was Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Yeah, I have to get a shout out at least for Tom Hanks's performance.
And I don't think we have time for your bonuses.
That's fine. I'll just say see Dark Water, see Fighting with My Family, see Loose, see the Peanut Butter Falcon, and see Waves.
Waves is great.
Oh, you've seen Waves.
I've seen Waves. Okay. Yeah, I didn't. I must have not marked it on this, but I saw Waves.
Yeah, see those movies. Those are
okay,
great.
Okay, so Moment of truth, guys. What's our favorite movie?
Who's going first?
Go, Barrett.
I think I'm torn between two things. I'm going to say Jojo Rabbit. It's my heart pick. I'm torn between my head and my heart, but I'm going to say Jojo Rabbit.
I'm wrong on one prediction already.
All right. Jeremy?
I'm going to go Parasite.
Okay.
And I'm correct on that prediction because I knew I was going to go Parasite.
Oh, nice.
Very, very close between Parasite and 1917. I think 1917 is a better technical film. But Parasite is just so inventive, story-wise, and how it's shot, the structure. I've never seen anything like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Aaron?
I'm going Knives Out.
Knives Out.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah. It is not only my favorite movie of the year. I do think it's the best movie of the year. I think it's a perfect film. Mm-hmm. And that's what I go with.
Wow.
I did not expect, because it does come down to me, guys. We will have a winner after this. but I did not expect to be that final vote, actually. it is between Parasite and Knives Out for me. I've seen Knives Out more. I have been saying Parasite's the best this whole time, so I'm going to go with Parasite.
That's a great
Parasite.
Choice.
Wow! I guessed wrong for everyone.
I think that's the correct pick. That was my head
too.
Pick.
I
for
did
sure.
Too.
And
that was my number two.
These are my top three, is JoJo, Parasite, and Knives Out.
I thought you would go Knives, you would go 1917, and you would go whatever I'm forgetting. Oh, 1917. I predicted that you two would win 1917.
I wouldn't have gone to 1917 till my fifth, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have put Once Upon a Time above there.
Bad taste.
I need to see Parasite again, but when I made my early, before 2019 ended, top five or whatever, Parasite was sitting right there. I've seen Knives Out twice since that list. And everything, so like it's not fair that it gets two more viewings and everything, and then Parasite doesn't. But I would have been fine with Knives Out as well. So
yeah,
I think
Knives Out, Parasite, 1917, any of those would have made me happy.
Mm. Yeah,
yeah.
All right, well, that'll do it for this week. What did you think was the best movie of this year?
I'm sure we'll get a few comments.
No,
on
everybody
this.
Agrees.
No, no, nope. Everybody knows the Parasite's best.
Everybody's seen Parasite.
And the Joker's awful. Everybody agrees.
That's right. Everybody agrees with that. Go to Sincast presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We also have a CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter. We're on SoundCloud. We're also on Discord. If you want to get on Discord, you can go to our Reddit page and find a link on the right side of that, or you can go to Facebook and private message me, and I will give you a link there.
Woo!
Aaron, where can people find you?
Lots of different places. If you like Sins content, which I think you do, we have a podcast called Behind the Sins that myself, Danae Hughes, and Jonathan Watkins, we call ourselves the B-Team, and we talk about the videos that came out the last week and have some fun talking about that stuff. So that's Behind the Sins. Mm. You can search for that. I also do a lot of movie reviews as a movie critic through SifPop, which is SIFTPOP.com, and you can find my Twitter there, everything else there with the movie stuff. So yeah,
nice.
Yep. And we also have a Patreon, and Sin Week is coming in March, and this episode drops in February. Mm-hmm. What is the price for somebody who wants a ticket to Sin Week in February?
You can still get tickets, but you only have like a week left. The deadline is February 19th, I believe, which will give us enough time to get you your t-shirt.
So a couple of weeks when this one comes out, right?
Just about. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, you have a couple of weeks after that.
Yeah,
after
just
this.
A couple of weeks to get a ticket, and we'd still love to see you there. But even if you don't come to Sin Week is for all of our members. Mm-hmm. And you can be a member as low as $3 a month at Patreon. It's patreon.com/cinemasins.
Yeah.
And once you're a member, there's all sorts of fun stuff.
There'll be three extra videos for people who who want to experience some Sin Week, and we'll have a lot of our stuff that we do will be on the videoed and everything.
Yeah, we're live streaming our podcast recordings that week.
So, that'll do it for this week. It's Chris Atkinson, Jeremy Scott, Barrett Scher, and Aaron Dicer. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
Now I'm better. I'm all better now. I got better.
Yeah.
She turned me into a newt.
Personally, I'm glad you didn't pass out. I think that
you know what?
Have...
I'm a fan myself.
How brilliant is that line, by the way? And then that line reading that that she turned me into a newt. And it's not I changed back.
No.
It's I got better. That is fucking genius.
We'll just keep talking about Frozen 2.
Yeah. Well, like, we did the mini-pod, and I would forgotten about the five elements thing.
Which is interesting, right? Because it's the key. When you think of this movie and the plot and the story, it's not very typical, which is fine. If you want to do something a little atypical, that's fine. But, like, who's the villain? You know, what is the protagonist trying to accomplish? What is the climax?
Mm-hmm.
All those questions don't have easy answers in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the elements, I think, are supposed to be thematically what we're supposed to be paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that Elsa is realizing how she's connected to the elementals,
mm-hmm.
and that she is the fifth element. It's very much
the
fifth element.
Well, and that was the thing. Like, that's something that I would normally just be picking up on. But, like, I had forgotten about the five element thing. After they told the initial story and then they got to the island, that had completely been erased from my mind.
Yeah.
Because they didn't really make that, like, in the fifth element, they're always talking about
all
these elements. But in that movie, it seemed like they said, all right, we told you about these elements, but there's only one that you really care about. And I didn't think that they would come back into play in the movie.
Yeah.
Like the water horse and all of that other stuff that came up.
I gotta go take a pee.
Yeah, the water horse is the chameleon, and the wind. The wind is one of them too. So it's hard to make wind a character.
Yeah,
you know.
So I wasn't
what about
even
the
making
happening?
That.
The happening did that.
That's true. Yes.
So I wasn't even making those connections watching the movie because I was like, because I had forgotten about that very brief moment that they talked about the five elements and like putting that fifth one in. You know.
Yeah, it's another backdoor sequel from M. Night. Frozen 2 is actually a sequel to The Happening.
Nice. I tell you what, did I tell you about the Halsey orgy video?
No.
We just did, so the new Halsey video is her, it's a super sad song. It's called You Should Be Sad, and it's about her breakup with G-Eazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so you think it's like a ballad almost, but it's like country tinged.
Mm-hmm.
And so the video naturally has her going to this underground barn orgy.
Okay.
And doing orgy stuff, like rubbing and nestling and stuff.
I like rubbing and nestling.
Yeah. The whole thing is just like an orgy, like a hay orgy, mm-hmm. like a barn orgy. And it's a little it's a little unnerving.
Yeah.
Cuz it doesn't really go with the song.
Hmm.
Like if it's a banger, then you'd think about like barn orgy. But no.
Right. And the one, that's an obvious one, but the one that I had forgotten about was the one where he's like, don't judge him on this one meeting alone.
Well, that's Dignan and Baldwin,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
Dignan leaves.
Yeah. He's like, don't judge him on this one meeting alone. He's not always like that.
What's Dignam's thing? Like, is he like that with everybody, or is he just like that with
He doesn't.
Costigan?
He never talks like that to Martin Sheen. Not once.
Yeah.
But he also doesn't talk to Martin Sheen much in the movie at all. He's always
facing and talking to Leo, right?
He's like the parrot on the pirate's shoulder. Like, you know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's like mini-me, like, hey, you do what my boss says.
Well, I guess during the meeting with Damon and all those guys, he's a similar way, right?
Like there's never once different, and never once does he go away from that whole I'm an asshole, and you
he's
know,
just a fucking asshole, man.
Yeah, and I think it's by design for his character because he just wants to make sure that nobody gets into that world of his, and because he's that's his biggest quality is being protective of the people who are in that department.
Yeah,
he's like, everybody's always asking for the codes and who it is and all that, and he's like, you're not getting that shit.
I have a little phlegm. I got some flamingos.
That's great. Coronavirus in the studio.
Damn it. And my favorite beer. And I had done everything. I pledged the whole place to get make sure that coronavirus
wasn't. I fucking love these new posters, man.
New posters day
perfect.
Is fun.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Yeah.
And I love the movie that none of us have seen.
Yeah.
I there's saw a, that.
There's an Did outside chance I've seen Godzilla 2000, but I don't remember anything about it. I mean,
it's Japanese, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the man in suit Godzilla.
I probably saw it. Yeah. Probably saw it, but I just don't. I mean, all Godzilla movies, those especially those, run together.
Because the one came out in 98 with Matthew Broderick, mm-hmm. and everyone hated it. And so the original people were like, we're going to do an old school Godzilla.
Oh. I had forgotten about that.
Yeah.
There you go. Nice.
Actually, I watched Godzilla King of the Monsters last night.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. That's, you know what's good about that movie is the colors.
Well,
that's
and the only thing cast. Literally every Hollywood actor is in that movie.
Vera Farmiga has this scene where she's, you know, expositing her plan and all that stuff, and she looks really pretty in that scene.
Does she have a Boston accent that's kind of bad?
She's got, like, the best eyes.
According
ever.
To my goddamn standards.